find out together.
Blog Talk Radio.
It's the regular one. Houston? Houston? We have a problem. Good evening and welcome to Erie House Radio. I'm Dale Kay of Spook Show, here along with...
Of course you have a problem. It's Dave Binkley from Weirdness Really Bad Movie and Spaceship One. And I'm also here with, I think his name is Carl the Gould.
Something like that.
Gala! Gala Gould, it's I, Carl the Gould, your host for the evening.
It is I, Carl the Gould, blah, blah to you all. And gosh darn those free people that write names on your videos. What is that called? Dictation? No, what's it called?
Closed captioning.
Closed captioning said my name was Carla Gold. Okay, sure. Not.
Sure.
Oh, fuck, real funny.
But, thank
okay.
you, Mr.
Anyway.
Einstein. All right, we got the...
Yeah. We like that, too.
Yeah, got three stories for you.
I'm
three
a
stories.
Lord.
Three stories for you tonight, all about little problems in space.
I have problems in space when I try to get into an extra large T-shirt.
Or into a phone booth with me.
That too.
That was problematic. when you got two not small guys trying to get into the same phone booth, nobody is Superman, but I digress. William Shatner is going to be starring one of our programs from Zero Hour.
Since
I don't have my special listener I had hoped for, we'll maybe save that one for last.
Okay. Maybe there.
Yep. Maybe.
Well, is Leonard Nimoy going to join us? Is that what you're saying?
That would not be logical.
No, that would not. But hey, it would be fun though. But yeah, not logical.
It would be interesting. Let's put it that way.
It would be very interesting. I agree.
If Nimoy were to call us live,
Leonard Nimoy.
If he was to call us live, I'd be a bit concerned.
I am not even on the website. Blog Talk Radio. There we go. Okay.
Yeah, and
we'll
got the. In addition to Zero Hour, we got Mysterious Traveler.
Yes.
An episode of Crisis. Yeah.
Crisis, not in space, I think. Maybe we can say it isn't.
Yes. Now it was in space.
There you go.
It was in space.
Wait.
They're astronauts.
Astronauts getting even. In Crisis, did I listen to the wrong thing?
Did I send you the wrong one? Sorry about that.
Buddy. I have a moral for the wrong show. How about that?
Perfect.
Well, let's see if it fits in with a blade of grass.
I'll bet it works anyway.
A blade of okay. Yeah, you sent me the wrong thing there. Okay, well,
I apologize, my friend. I apologize.
Many of your morals are multi-purpose. Fear not, young man.
Let me think.
Yeah, I want you to use it on that because we'll see if it works.
Yeah.
We'll see if it works.
This one's kind of specific, but okay. Okay, we'll try. I'll just add in space at the end, and it'll work.
Yes, in space. That's all you have to do is add the word in space, and we're good. We could settle this hoopla by starting with Crisis.
Makes it funny, too.
You know?
Oh, gosh. Okay. So it's not the Art of Getting Even.
No, it's not.
However, it was. But they had the same broadcast dates. Go figure.
So it'll all work out. Trust me.
There you go.
I will find a way to segue them all together as we welcome GGSI Paper and Fogsbane to the chat. Welcome, folks. All three of you.
All three?
Yes. GGSI Paper and Fogsbane is all three of them.
Yep.
Do the math. All right.
Okay. Carry the seven. All right. I'm there.
Okay, good. I didn't warn him there'd be math, but there is.
And did you bring the garculator? Did you bring your garculator?
I got my garculator, but I don't have anything to calculate. What are we talking about? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Count your toes. Do you have enough fingers? Anyway, not if you're in from West Virginia.
I'm a disabled veteran. I don't got no toes.
We'll graft a couple on you.
There you go. I don't have my screaming goat person thing. Where is that? There it is. All right. Wow. There you go.
Oh, heavens.
Yeah, my goat's kind of sick, but
give your goat a physical on some other program. No, I'm sorry.
Cold hands. That's all my goat ever says.
Yes.
And then it goes. Okay.
As one does.
Mm-hmm.
Anyhow.
Well, yeah. Cold
three
hands.
Programs.
We know. All right. Yes. What about a radio?
You don't say. No, we're doing pretty good. We might even have the extra time for bonus material. So you just hang in there, brother. We got
okay.
good stuff. And this
pickled goat.
Yes. You've never
had pickled goat?
Is
that what happens when you give it an inspection with cold hands? You get a pickled goat? I don't know.
I don't know. I can't say that I've ever had pickled goat myself.
Oh, yeah. They always have them in our delicatessen in a big jar. It almost looks like one of those jars at the doctor's office. Same color, too. With
you
a
know,
goat's,
I mean,
like hoof in there. It's good. Good stuff.
I know that as beings, we should, you know, you eat everything, so we shouldn't be disgusted by it, but I'm not going to eat a tongue. I'm sorry. I don't care whose it is.
I don't eat anything. I can't eat anything that can talk back to me.
No lips, no teeth, no tongue, no tonsils for Dave. All right, we got it.
Hey, Denise, the parrot is safe. Anyway, it will talk to you. But
hello, radio.
There you go.
Hold on.
The parrot's safe.
Whole lot of radio.
Whole lot of radio. Tons of it. Let's start with crisis, shall we?
Let's do that. I want to
see
how Gar's
moral
fits
turns
in.
Out. Yeah, I want to see how the moral turns out.
I'm typing right now.
Crisis, the actual title, is A Blade of Grass.
Yes.
With an air date of November 18th, 1976.
The Golden West Radio Network presents Crisis.
We're almost to your room, Major Chandler.
That's nice. Hope it has a view.
Well, matter of fact, it does. Nice private courtyard just outside your big picture window.
Then why are you wasting it on me? Why not give it to some patient who can see?
Oh, come on, Tom. When we take those bandages off, you'll be seeing just like you used to.
Yeah.
And when you've gotten a little stronger, well, you can even get rid of this wheelchair.
Whoopee.
Here we are. Let me roll you in.
Carpet on the floor. Feels like it anyway.
I told you, Tom, nothing but the best for you.
Then how about a little R&R?
What would you like?
You know what I'd like. I'd like to get out of here, go home.
Of course you would. And that's just what you'll do, too, just the minute you're strong enough. Look, Tom, I know you still don't have any memory of it, but you took an incredible beating in that space capsule. By all rights, you shouldn't even be here now. The re-entry heat turned it into a flaming...
I know. I've heard it a dozen times.
Well, I'm just saying, give yourself time to mend.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess I'm lucky. I could have been burned up like Mike and Danny.
That's right.
But why wasn't I?
Well, you'll probably never know. Of course, NASA is doing everything it can to find the answers, but meantime...
Yeah. Meantime, you got to keep me alive so I can keep feeding data on the flight. Incidentally, how many more sessions with a hypnotist?
She's almost through.
That's good.
Well, your bed's right here. Here, feel it.
Okay.
The bathroom is right over here.
Yeah.
And remember, if you need anything, push the button on the arm of your wheelchair.
Raj.
See you at dinner.
Yeah.
Major Thomas Lincoln Chandler, United States Air Force. Sole survivor of America's boldest thrust into space, the circumnavigation of the planet Mars. Now heavily bandaged under treatment at a remote military hospital, the fragments of the three-man mission's last moments play back again and again in his memory.
Chandler, fire full retros. The computer's still locked in. They won't fire. Closing rates increasing. Revere, calling Houston.
Forget it, Mike. Remember the delay.
60 feet per second.
Trying to circuit breakers.
I did.
70 feet per second.
Shut up, Danny. Mike, get us out of this.
Hang on, Tommy. Look at the ground coming up.
Don't stop working those thrusters.
90 feet per second.
I don't want to die like this. I don't want to die.
I'll be back in 1 minute with tonight's story of suspense. A blade of grass. After this message. And now, crisis.
I didn't die. Why not? Why Danny? Why Mike? Why not me? The coward of the mission. Coward.
Well, how goes it, Major? Dr. Peel again.
Oh, don't bother to knock.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought I heard you talking.
No, forget it.
Whatever you say.
What is it now?
Florence is with me.
Good morning, Major Chandler.
Oh, no. Will you have mercy on me? I don't want to go through anymore.
I'm sorry, Major, but I think just this one session more will do it. And then I'll be able to turn over a complete profile of the flight to NASA. I know you've been through an awful lot, but I promise you I'll make it as easy as...
What are you doing?
We're just rolling up your sleeve, you know.
Oh, God, do I know.
All right, Tom, here we go.
Well, you'll have to admit it's a lot quicker than the old hypodermic.
That's what you said the last time. You're always repeating yourself.
I am? I'm sorry.
Let's start the count back, Major.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 6, 4, 4.
He's all yours.
All right, Major Chandler. We're in the command module of the Paul Revere now. 62 days into the mission.
Dr. Peel, Major.
Okay, come on in.
Well, ready for the big day? The coming out party?
Come on, Doctor, let's get it over with.
Well, I don't blame you. Weeks and weeks without eyesight, but that's almost over now. I just hold perfectly still.
Doctor?
Mm-hmm.
Is my face... will I be...
Disfigured? No.
How is that possible?
Well, we think we're pretty good at rebuilding.
And then can I go home?
Just as soon as you're strong enough.
When will that be?
Easy now, don't move. Now, there are two cotton pads over your eyelids. I'm going to remove them. And I want you to keep your eyes shut until I tell you to open them.
Okay.
All right, the pads are off. Feel okay?
Yeah.
See any light?
I think, yeah. It's sort of a brown red.
Fine. Now, very slowly, open your eyes. Tell me what you see.
I can see you. I can see you. And my room. And my hands. And the sky. Grass. And the sun.
Very good, good. Well, what do you think of that handsome young fellow in the mirror?
I'm a lot thinner, aren't I? But
But other than that, I can't even see a single scar. You're a genius, Dr. Peel.
You're a genius.
Oh, I didn't do it alone. We worked over you night and day for a long time. But, of course, you wouldn't remember any of that. Just as well.
I don't know.
You don't know what?
I don't know whether it's just as well that I can't remember. I don't even know what happened. Or how I got out alive when Mike and Danny didn't.
Oh, don't concern yourself with it. The human mind has a sort of safety valve. When it experiences something that's unbearable, sometimes the memory of it is blocked completely out. It remains recorded on your subconscious mind, of course, etched in the convolutions of this part of your brain right here.
I want it out. I want to know.
Oh, I don't think that would be wise.
I want to talk to Florence. I want to hear the tapes I made while I was under hypnosis.
Florence works for NASA, Major. You'd have to get their permission.
They're my memories. I have a right to them. More right than they have.
Are you sure you'd want to remember?
Sure, I'm sure.
Mike, get us out of this!
Much better left alone.
No. No, I want to know how I got out of that module. Alive. And Mike and Danny didn't.
Hang on, Tommy. Look at the clown coming up. Don't stop working those thrusters 90 feet per second. I don't want to die like this. I don't want to die.
That's all I can remember. Screaming, I don't want to die. And then nothing. Nothing until I woke up here in this hospital and learned that Mike and Danny were dead. Dr. Peel, you've got to let me know what happened.
Crisis is bringing you a story called A Blade of Grass. We'll be back with Act Two in a minute. Now, Act Two of A Blade of Grass.
Dr. Peel! Somebody! Hey, open my door! Will you open my door?
Major Chandler, what's the matter?
I'll tell you what's the matter. I lie down and take a little afternoon nap, and when I wake up, I find you blocked me in.
Oh, Tom, you're our most valuable guest. It was just for your own protection. Besides, you're still not...
Protection? Who are you protecting me from? I thought this was a military hospital, and I'm a patient. But the way you treat me, you'd think I was a prisoner.
Tom, get a hold of yourself.
That's one more thing. Why can't my wife visit me?
Your wife?
Yeah. If I can't go home, she ought to be able to visit me here. Look, I can walk a little. I'm able to use a telephone. I want a car.
Well, that presents a problem. As I told you, this is a top-security hospital, and right now you're the biggest news story on Earth. Frankly, we're under orders to keep your presence here a secret.
What? You mean Barbara doesn't even know where I've been all these weeks?
No.
What do they tell her? That I'm dead? Is that it?
No, of course
not. Listen to me,
Peel.
I want out of this place, or else I want Barbara here. She's a good Air Force wife. She can keep secrets. Now get her here.
Look, Tom, I'm just a doctor. I don't make policy. But I understand how you feel. I'll do the best I can.
Oh, I'm sorry, Doctor. Hey, I didn't mean to blow up at you. It's just...
I understand. And I'll try to get them to bend the rules, okay?
Okay. And Doc, thanks.
Ooh, that's the end of part one. Of Crisis. Well, actually, we're into part two a little bit. Of Crisis! They said they were going to have a coming out party. I think it means something a little different nowadays.
It said there was going to be a coming out party? What? Really? Did I miss that?
Yeah. Yeah, that was a little earlier
in
the story. Yeah. They use that expression.
Right.
It means something totally different.
Right. That's a great thing about old-time radio is you hear these different colloquial expressions, if you will, that mean completely something different in our 2022 vocabularies, I guess.
Yep. My, how the world
Dave, goes. Dave, where did Crisis come from? What's the deal with Crisis?
Yeah. Dave, are you with us?
Oh, Dave.
Hold up. Let me shut him off and turn him on. Sometimes that works. Dave, tell us more about Crisis. Well, when Dave gets back, maybe he'll tell us. What I found interesting, that little bit of music they had there for a brief moment, was from Journey to the Center of the Earth, conducted and composed, I guess, by Bernard Herrmann. And, of course...
I hear some banging around. Is that Dave?
No, yeah. It's not.
Oh, there you are.
The TV technician is back.
Where did Crisis come from, Dave?
It came out of the West Coast, out of Seattle, and the mind of Jim French. The mind of Jim French.
Dave, are you using Cox Internet right now?
What's that? What's that?
Are you using Cox Internet right now?
No.
Oh,
the wife,
man.
The wife, the TV technician had to go downstairs. I'm sorry. The wife can't watch TV without me here.
I was messing with you and Gara at the same time.
Anyway. Oh, I see.
I know.
It's out. Gara, he's the same guy that created that Harry Nile, a detective character.
Harry Nile.
We've talked about him before.
I found it was interesting they used the Bernard Herrmann's music in this episode.
They must have, they obviously paid for their music, so they were allowed to use certain things in there that most of us can't touch.
I know, I wish. Oh. I would want to do a show of all his music, or at least all the movies his music was used in.
The episode of Crisis that I listened to, that wasn't the incorrect one, had amazing music in it, to the point where I thought I was listening to a Looney Tunes cartoon. Great music.
Yep. Well, again, when you're in radio, you get to use bits of licensed stuff that we don't have that here.
Yeah. Great music beds. Yeah. And I like some of the, 1930s and 40s the radios. The organ playing was almost a third person. It was just that much of an impact on the program. Atmosphere.
Yeah. Yeah. And throughout the crisis, he plays a lot of this. I think we've done a couple of them. Have you noticed some of the music from some different productions and such?
Well, identify those. Yep.
And if you get the license to use them, pay for the license to use them, then you could use them in many cases. But, obviously they have that. And I know that Shoestring Radio Theater has used some different music that's licensed otherwise. And I don't know whether they go under the license of the public radio station that they serve under. I'm not sure.
Some public radio stations do get certain liberties, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, liberties and some purchase, their license might not cost as much as a commercial station.
Not the kind of liberties sailors take, but,
No, not that kind of liberty, no.
Oh, okay.
Dave, what was the longevity of Crisis? Just the two-year run, or how long did it last?
Well, a two-year run at least, and then a year of Harry Nile. Then they did Imagination Theater after Harry Nile went back to doing dramas. He has also done Sherlock Holmes adaptions. He has been licensed through the Dame Edna Doyle, or whatever her name was, the granddaughter of him while she was still alive. And so he was licensed to write and create new Sherlock Holmes stories, as well as, use his old ones. So he and Jim may still be with us, his wife, Pat French, who was in all of these and many of the other productions that he did. She was the assistant in Harry Nile as well. She has passed, but Harry Nile, the guy to play Harry Nile, he's passed. But Jim French, to the best of my knowledge, is still with us, but he's, I believe, no longer making productions at this point.
Have we heard Harry Nile on Erie House Radio before?
I don't think I've played any here on Harry Nile on here yet, but.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
Fodder for later.
Well, gang, let's get back to Crisis, A Blade of Grass.
We'll
be back, or at least two of us will.
Well, Major Chandler, how's everything today?
Hello, Florence. Wait a minute. More hypnosis?
No, relax. It's an unofficial visit. I just wanted to see how you're getting along.
I'm bugged, to tell you the truth. It's being shut up here, incommunicado, like a prisoner. No mail, no telephone, no visitors. Why? You're from NASA. Explain it to me.
Well, I don't make policy, but the reason is... Look, this is pretty heavy stuff.
Tell me.
Well, it seems that public opinion isn't too friendly towards you at the moment. Because of the trouble on board the command module. All the networks were carrying the cabin communication live.
You mean they heard everything?
Everything. It seems the great American public likes its heroes 100% heroic, even in the face of death.
I see. And because I survived and Mike and Danny didn't.
Now, you get the general idea.
So I'm locked up here for my own protection.
It'll blow over.
You think it will?
Sure it will.
Look, would you leave me alone for a while, huh?
Certainly. It's just temporary, Major.
Don't stop working those thrusters. 90 feet per second. I don't want to die like this. I don't want to die.
Yeah. But now I don't want to live. How does a man commit suicide? Maybe that big plate glass window. Head first.
Hey, you hear that?
Yeah. Hey, over the wall. You all right? Hey, boost me up. I want to see in the next yard.
Yeah. Okay, there you go. What do you see?
The guy on the grass. He fell right through a plate glass window. Wait a minute. Wait a minute.
What?
It looks like... It is. It's Tommy.
Oh, come on.
I'm telling you. Hey, Chandler. Chandler.
Who's that? Who's that?
It is. It's Chandler. Tommy. It's Danny.
Danny? Danny, you're dead. You and Mike, they said so.
See me? See my head? Over the top of the wall.
Hey, somebody's crazy here. Let me walk over there.
Hey, Tommy, take it easy.
I want to get over by the wall. I'm going to make it. There.
You made it.
I can't believe it. They said you and Mike were dead.
Mike's alive, too. Come on up the wall, Mike.
Hi, Tommy.
Mike, I can't believe it.
Neither can we. We thought you were dead.
Why would they do that? Why would they lie to us?
I haven't any idea.
They said your body was never recovered.
We just got outside today for the first time.
I feel like either I've gone crazy or else we are dead. Really dead. Do you suppose we could be?
That's crazy in itself.
Or is it?
I don't know. I don't know what to believe.
One thing... Did they tell you why you're being kept here?
Yeah, because of the publicity, because the world thinks I'm a coward for letting you guys die.
That's ridiculous. What'd they do to you?
I don't know exactly. I was unconscious for weeks, and then I was blind for a while.
Same with us.
You're kidding.
Danny and I tried and tried to remember exactly what happened to the command module, but we can't bring it back.
But Florence knows. She hypnotized us.
Florence? Do the same to me.
Then they know.
Sure they know.
Listen, team. There's something very weird going on here.
You know it.
Ever since the bandages came off, we've been noticing little things. Noises.
Yeah, and sounds that aren't there.
Sounds that aren't there? What do you mean?
Aircraft. Where do you think they could put us where there's never the sound of an airplane?
Huh? You're right.
We figure we're definitely not in North America. Look at the angle of the sunlight. If we've been unconscious for several weeks, it must be fall by now. But the sun is in the wrong place in the sky.
Yeah. Yeah. An astrophysicist would notice those things.
Maybe being a geologist, I ought to examine the ground.
What is it?
The grass. The grass is a different strain than I've ever seen.
You a botanist, too?
No, but it doesn't take a botanist to tell the difference between grass and plastic.
What? Have they got artificial turf here?
We'll soon see.
What are you digging for?
I want to see what's under this little blade of grass.
Well?
Oh, no.
Well, what is it, Chandler?
Here, help me pull up more of this grass, will you? There. Now, you tell me what you see under this plastic grass.
Steel. Or some kind of metal.
Major, what are you doing outside?
Uh-oh, it's Dr. Peel.
Then you know him, too?
He's our surgeon.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. Yeah, and so do I.
You have a little explaining to do, Doctor.
Why'd you lie to us, Peel? Everything was a lie, wasn't it?
Just a minute, now.
You lied. You told me Mike and Danny were dead.
And you said Tommy was dead. Why?
So it all adds up that you're keeping us prisoner.
Now, let's have the answers, Peel.
Gentlemen, just a minute, please.
Where are we? Where is this place?
All right, please. Let me answer you. It's true. Obviously, you were deceived, all three of you. But if you could only see it from our standpoint, I'm sure you'd understand.
This hospital isn't even in the U.S., right?
You're correct, Major.
Oh, well, I get it now. I guess we all know where we are, don't we?
Yeah, diverted by a Russian trick of some kind.
No, you're mistaken.
So you hijacked the command module.
Well, I don't know what we're waiting for. Grab him, Tommy.
Oh, no. No.
Got him. Come on. He's our hostage. We're busting out of here. Back through Tommy's window.
No, you won't get away with it.
Come on, here's my room.
Have the doors open.
Come on in.
Where does this corridor go to?
Talk, Peel.
Nowhere.
We'll find out where. Keep in front of us, Mike.
You don't understand.
Here's a door. Now, what do we do?
Go through it.
No.
All right. What's on the other side, Peel?
Maybe the big boss.
Please listen to me. I'll tell you. When your capsule completed its third orbit around Mars, we interfered with your onboard computer and took control of your ship.
Oh, that's crazy. There's no way in the world you could do that.
Besides, I clearly remember us falling out of control to the surface of the Earth.
No, Major. Not Earth. Mars.
What? And how did we ever get back?
That's what I'm trying to tell you.
Hey, what do you mean?
You never did return to Earth.
Then where are we? You mean we crashed on Mars? You mean this is Mars?
No, you know better than that. Mars is 115 degrees below zero. We couldn't survive for a second on Mars.
And where are we, Peel? What's on the other side of that door?
The laboratory. The laboratory aboard one of our ships. You see, we've duplicated Earth in this section of the lab, learned your language and habits, created acceptable images for ourselves, identical to the life form you represent.
But why?
To study you, to learn about you, and of course to prevent you from learning about us, which is why we took over your space capsule.
And what are you going to do with us now?
Unfortunately, you will no longer be useful to us as specimens.
Specimens?
Now, will you explain one thing to me? What was it that gave it away? How did you learn to suspect?
It was a blade of grass. A blade of grass Tommy pulled. It wasn't quite right. Almost, but not quite.
I see. Such a simple elemental thing. Well, thank you. We won't make that mistake next time. Now, gentlemen, shall we return to our rooms? Dinner will be served at 6 p.m., as usual.
A word about next week's Crisis program and the names of tonight's players after this word. Tonight, Crisis presented A Blade of Grass. Featured in our cast were Terry McManus, Glenn Ethier, Terry Rose, Pat French, and Russ Mooney. The program was written and directed by yours truly, Jim French. Our engineer was Carney Barton. Crisis is produced at Audio Recording Incorporated. Be with us again next week for Crisis.
And we'll see if we can find us here. And so, oh, no. Now the... the moment of truth. Will the wrong moral work for the other story?
We'll find out in just a moment. As soon as I scroll my ass. Uh-huh. Scroll my ass.
Scroll, right, scroll.
Yeah. Not too bad for a guy with glucose number of 48. Real House Radio proudly presents Scars Modified. Moral of the story.
In space.
In space.
Yes. Never bet against public opinion in space. Or the government will never lie to you in space.
In space.
In space.
I like it.
In space.
I like it. In space, yeah. Yes.
In space.
Or as the goat would say...
Or,
in space.
Or the problem with revenge is usually user error in space. That was
in
the,
space.
Yeah, in space, yeah.
Don't get lost. Don't get lost.
Because the other one was about revenge. Yeah. What, we're sad because of the moral? I don't know. It could be.
I don't
know.
I'd be able to do it. The government will never lie to you in space. That's it.
That's a fun now. That's the funniest thing you've ever said.
Really? Wow. I didn't even try that hard.
Mark Twain once said, keep in mind it was Mark Twain, not me. He once said, if your vote counted, they wouldn't let you do it. That would be a good moral for a story.
If your vote counted, they wouldn't let
that
you do it.
That would be a good moral for a story. That would be a good moral for a story, but not the story.
That would.
Oh, wait. You forgot to add in space.
In space.
That's
there you go. Now it fits.
Right.
Now it fits.
In space. Yeah, there you go. How about that? Hey, you like that better? The government will never lie to you. In space.
Space, space. You should have an echo.
There is an echo thing. I can't figure out the device, but I know it would do it, but I don't remember
how
it works. Anyway. But I digress.
Yeah, Dale, that reminds me of a Bob and Ray bit about the guy who teaches people to speak who don't, you know, in a crowded room when they don't have a megaphone or anything. And he goes, my friends, I wanted to be here with you tonight. And he would go on, but he teaches people how to speak like that. So like you're speaking like without a sound system. So, yeah, fun stuff.
Last week on Horrible Horror, I did a Bob and Ray thing about the Komodo dragon.
The Komodo dragon, yes. Yes, that was a great piece. Was that off of the Bob and Ray, Jane Lorraine, and Gilda bit?
I don't know.
That went on in place of a Saturday Night Live, and the one that I just mentioned anyway, and they did 90 minutes, and it went worldwide to the armed forces. It had like one of the largest, up to that point, one of the largest possible audiences in the history of television at that point with Bob and Ray. Well, it was Bob and Ray, Jane, Lorraine, and Gilda. So.
Did you know the worst thing about a Komodo dragon? Did you know the worst thing about a Komodo dragon?
They're vicious canine or something like that.
The breath.
Yes.
The breath? Yeah, the breath.
Well, you're close with the breath. Now, they're extremely huge, extremely heavy.
Yep.
They can whack you with their tail. They can bite you, and it will hurt like hell. But the worst thing is, eaters of carrion.
The bacteria.
So they have horrible stuff in your mouth, and you will easily get infected and die from that more than being mauled by them.
Right. What I understood happens is they bite you, and then they just follow you until you die because they know that the stuff that they got in their mouth is – the funny thing is, as hideous as all that bacteria and nasty stuff is, it doesn't kill the dragon. The dragon's impervious, but, the prey, it's going to – you got about 24 hours if you don't get help.
The world's largest living lizard. And there's a stuffed Komodo dragon in some hotel in Washington, D.C. or something.
As there should be. In space.
Space.
In space. That bit was hilarious.
Anyway, we got a whole lot of radio.
To the mysterious traveler, and we'll come back to more modern times after that. But little ditty.
Oh, I like this. I love this one. Yeah.
Hey, maybe we'll have a moral for this one too.
We have an air base
in space, space,
and the last survivor. It's called The Last Survivor, and it's from way back.
October 11th, 1949.
In space.
In space, space, space.
In space.
A train in space.
The Mutual Broadcasting System presents The Mysterious Traveler, written, produced, and directed by Robert A. Arthur and David Kogan. And starring tonight, two of radio's foremost actors, Ralph Bell and Robert Bryan, in The Last Survivor.
Hey, I'm still here.
You're still here.
I'm still here.
This is The Mysterious Traveler, inviting you to join me on another journey into the realm of the strange and the terrifying. I hope you'll enjoy the trip, and it will thrill you a little and kill you a little. So settle back, get a good grip on your nerves, and be comfortable, if you can, as we journey into the unknown in the story I call The Last Survivor.
In space!
In space!
In a small 6 by 10 feet radio compartment, a man sits sprawled in the transmission operator's chair. His hair is unkempt, his face bearded. He stares at the panel board before him with vacant, bloodshot eyes. Now and then, as though in a dream, and as if for the thousandth time, he leans forward and picks up a wireless radio phone.
Calling base, San Augustine. Come in, base, San Augustine. Over. Calling base, San Augustine. Come in, San Augustine. Over.
They don't answer, do they?
No, Connors, I'm afraid not. How do you feel?
I'm all right. Colonel, why don't you try another channel?
I've tried them all. Haven't been able to make contact.
Have you checked the equipment?
Yes, to the best of my ability. As far as I can see, it seems to be in working order.
Maybe if you were to help me to my feet, I could double-check it for you.
No, 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 Connors. Lie where you are. Don't try getting up. Take it easy.
But I'm a radio man. I know the equipment.
Later, Connors, later. Is there anything I can get you? Food, water?
No. No, thank you, Colonel. It's strange. Just the two of us out here. Like this.
Yes.
What will you do when you're alone, Colonel?
Alone?
I can't last much longer.
Oh, nonsense, Connors. You're going to be all right. You're going to be all right, do you hear?
Who are you kidding, Colonel? Me? Or yourself? It's a strange way to end up, isn't it?
A strange way to end up? Yes. I remember that day so long ago. So very long ago. I feel as if I were looking back on another age. And perhaps I am. What year was it? 1947? Yes. It was a year like so many the world has known. It was a year of war and peace. of fear and hope, of feast and famine. And I was stationed at the Army Air Base at San Augustine, New Mexico, chief of the experimental rocket section. It was in the spring of 1947, May 8th to be exact, that I was ordered to report at General Farnsworth's office.
Come in.
Colonel Werby reporting, sir.
Oh, come in, Dick. Have a seat.
Thank you, sir.
Orders have just come through for you to report to the chief in Washington.
Washington?
That's right.
Have you any idea what it's about, sir?
Yes, I was speaking to the chief just a few minutes ago. Seems they're interested in those spaceship plans you submitted to them.
My interplanet rocket ship plans?
Yes. The chief and his technical staff seem to think you did an excellent job. It started a certain amount of activity.
But, sir, I clearly stated in my accompanying report that a flight into space is impossible at this time. The fuel just doesn't exist that can power an interplanet spaceship.
It seems that you're wrong, Dick.
Wrong?
Yes. According to Professor Murray, atomic power could make your interplanet ship practical. And if anyone should know, it would be Professor Murray. He helped develop the atomic bomb.
You mean he's interested?
So I understand. The chief's going to ask for an appropriation of $20 million for the development and construction of an atomic-powered spaceship. You and Professor Murray are to work on the project jointly. How soon can you leave?
I'll be ready in an hour, sir.
There'll be a plane at your disposal. Good luck.
Thank you, sir.
Well, I've looked forward for some time now to meeting you, Colonel.
Thank you, Professor Murray. Why did you become interested in my plan, sir?
As you know, I am one of the scientists who helped develop the atomic bomb. It was a terrible responsibility. And we scientists must answer to a great extent for its use. I'm hoping that through a successful spaceship, mankind will turn to peaceful uses of atomic energy.
I understand, sir.
I've studied your plans with minute care, and the ship you've blueprinted is a masterpiece of design.
Thank you, Professor.
Oh, not at all. You deserve praise for your work. Now, as for the fuel problem, I'm convinced atomic energy is the answer.
But, Professor, what about the radiation danger, if it were used?
We would have to design and construct an engine that would be a complete unit in itself, and completely sealed off from the rest of the ship. Now, according to my calculations, very rough calculations at the moment, the ship would have to achieve an acceleration of 4H to reach a velocity of 8 miles a second, at which speed it could attain enough momentum to...
A little over 2 years later, the completed XIP-1 was wheeled from its hangar at San Augustine, New Mexico. Its towering cylindrical body rose 240 feet into the air, and its silver nose pointing skyward gleamed under the strong sun. The field was cleared of all personnel, and from a concrete observation control tower 2 miles away, Professor Murray and I prepared to send it on its first test flight.
Well, Dick, this is it. The culmination of all our years of work. There's the XIP out there ready for flight.
Yes. Well, the next few hours will tell all. Huh? Field's been cleared, Professor. We're ready to proceed.
Then take over, Dick. I'll stand by. Keep an eye on the observation radar and control course.
Sound flight warning signal.
Sound flight warning signal.
Switch on control panel.
Switch on control panel.
Switch on tower receiver.
Switch on tower receiver.
Switch on XIP flight radio center.
Switch on XIP flight radio center.
Cut in nuclear jet number one.
Cut in nuclear jet number one.
The ship is hovering, Dick.
Yes. Cut in nuclear jet number two.
Cut in nuclear jet number two.
the XIP. She's taking off.
Instrument reading. Rate of flight, 500 miles per hour. Altitude, 1,000 feet. Rate of flight, 2,000 miles per hour. Altitude, 90,000 feet. Rate of altitude, 4,000 miles per hour. Altitude,
2,000. Hour after hour, we traced the flight of the XIP through space. When night came, the ship's flaming tail became visible to the naked eye as it traveled further and further into the infinite. At dawn, after the XIP had flown well over 1,000,000 miles, electronic light signals were sent out to reverse the ship's course and direct it back toward Earth. 12 hours later, the XIP landed safely at the San Augustine base. It was that moment that was the beginning of a new age. The age of interplanet travel. A year passed, and the XIP made test flight after test flight, flying greater and greater distances on automatic radio instrument control. And finally, the day came when we were ready. Ready to consider the first human flight into space.
Well, Vic, after weeks of discussion with our leading scientists, our objective has been selected.
What's it to be, Professor?
The planet Mars.
Oh. Oh, why Mars?
Oh, for a number of very excellent reasons. Mars is the closest planet to us. Furthermore, it's the planet that we know the most about, as little as that may be.
Mars, that would be a flight of approximately 50 million miles one way.
Yes. How soon do you think the XIP can be prepared for such a flight?
Oh, I should estimate 30 days.
30 days. All right, Jake. We'll set September 15th as flight day.
Ready for flight, sir. The crew are at their station.
Thank you. Is there anything, Professor, you want to say before we take off?
No, Dick. Everyone's been thoroughly briefed.
Well, then the moment's arrived. Stand by for flight orders.
Stand by for flight orders.
Sound warning signal.
Sound warning signal.
Fasten safety belts.
Fasten safety belts.
Switch on flight vision screen.
Switch on flight vision screen.
Establish contact with base.
Establish contact with base.
Cut in nuclear jet number one.
Cut in nuclear jet number one.
Cut in nuclear jet number two.
Cut in nuclear jet number two.
We're off.
Instrument reading.
Flight distance covered. 5,000 feet. Time, 5 seconds. Flight velocity, 600 miles per hour. Flight distance covered. 80,000 feet. Time, 9 seconds. Flight velocity, 2,000 miles per hour.
With each passing second, the XIP gained speed, carrying us ever faster towards the edge of the Earth's gravitational field. All was silent in the command room, except for the voice of the control officer reading the instrument panel. As the 8-minute flight mark approached, we reached the zenith of our speed, the professor blacked out, held from falling only by his safety belt. One by one, the technicians and crew members lost consciousness. And then I, too, found my vision failing, and all became black. When I regained consciousness, I found other members of the crew already recovered and at their stations. The professor was slowly coming to as I got to my feet. Instrument reading.
Flight distance covered. 15,000 miles. Time, 27 minutes, 30 seconds. Flight velocity, 26,000 miles per hour.
How do you feel, Professor?
Oh, my heart's acting up a bit, but I can't expect too much from it at my age. Everyone else all right?
Yes, everyone came through fine. Professor, look at the flight vision screen. You can see the Earth, 16,000 miles behind us.
As a scientist, I knew what it would look like from this distance. And yet, it's incredible. You can see the Atlantic and Pacific Oceans and the North and South American continents from pole to pole. Half the world.
Yes. It's like looking down on a small globe of the world.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Are we holding to our course, Dick?
Oh, yes, Professor. The automatic instrument controls haven't deviated a hairline. We're dead on course.
Good. If our calculations are correct, in 76 days, we should reach Mars.
Set your calendar. 76 days, we'll be there.
Okay, we'll be back in 76 days for the end of the story, everyone. Thanks for being here.
Yep.
So they're saying 76 days, so that's two and a half months. We have determined in 2022 it takes 9 months to get there. Crazy with the math.
Well, we're not as fast as they were back then.
Yeah.
Yeah. We
America's
need those hydrogen
lazy,
engines.
So.
And bigger.
So we need to go back to 49 so we can do it in 76 days.
How about Wyoming?
Maybe they confused,
yeah,
maybe they confused it with 76 trombones in the big parade. Maybe that's what they did.
Maybe. Maybe.
I don't have a trombone, but there we go. Isn't that a trombone? Isn't a trombone a slide device?
It's a slide instrument, yeah. Closest thing we have here.
No, that's a
sliding
trumpet.
Thing. Yeah.
That's a trumpet. Isn't that a trumpet? No, I'm thinking of a tuba.
No, that's a strumpet. That's a strumpet. That's different.
It's called the slide trombone.
There is
a slide trumpet. There is a slide trumpet.
That's not what I was talking about.
Oh.
Was the trumpet the one with it? Wah, 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 wah. They had that thing they put in the horn.
You can put a mute in a trombone,
wah,
too.
Wah, wah.
You're just stuffing things in the bell. You just stuff things in the bell. There you go.
Mute the sound and give it that echoey, cool effect.
Wah, 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 wah. I love that. Jazzy stuff. They said in this that they're using safety belts. They didn't do that in Star Trek. They just leaned to the left and leaned to the right, or fell right into the floor.
Yep. And speaking of Star Trek, coming up a little later, right after this episode, we have Zero Hour, starring Bill Shatner.
What is that?
And hosted by Rod Serling, your host.
Yes.
Rod Sterling.
The only one who can smoke a cigarette on the radio. Yep.
I'm going to smoke a cigarette. Wow, we listen to the radio. What is that thing that goes from point A to point B, but now it's a vehicle? Dale uses it a lot, like when he says, pull out of radio. That's a what? What is that called?
Segway?
Segway. Now I forgot what I was talking about.
I thought Segway was that thing that you ride off a cliff on.
Yeah. Was it the inventor?
It
wasn't the inventor. Was it?
Yeah,
was it the inventor.
The guy who
inventor
the Segway,
died.
He rode it off a cliff. Yeah.
He rode it off a cliff and he died. Yep.
Yep.
Yeah, that's because he saw where our society was going. I can't take it no more. I'm out of here. And it took him 2 hours and 68 seconds to get off that cliff. It was slow going, but it only took him
25 seconds to get down off the cliff.
I thought it was
suicide
out of shame for just inventing it, but whatever.
No, well,
not to be opinionated or anything.
Hey, no, but see, I would not do it for shame. You have someone in America that may that took a rock and said, this can be your pet, and they became a millionaire in 1 year selling a rock.
It's the beauty of this country.
And yeah, and then the mood rings, too, you know?
Yep.
The mood rings. Oh, my God. Oh, I love – okay, did you guys have a mood ring, or were they just
yes,
a chick?
I had a mood ring at one
I did
point
not.
In my life.
I did
had a
not.
Mood ring.
Yeah. And it always said that I was overly amorous or something like that.
Mine exploded. It's weird.
yours turned into one of those eight balls, and it said, stop being so emotional.
No, it was more like that character Totes when they opened up the crypt at the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Oh, it melted. It just melted right on your fingers. Yeah, there you go.
Speaking of Raiders of the Lost Ark, I just watched the trailer for next summer's last Indiana Jones movie.
Wow. In space!
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
No,
Indiana Jones
space.
Finally gets to space. He's 105.
That's right.
Let me guess,
what happens when you get...
Does he crash onto a golf course?
It's called Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny.
I knew it needed cowbell. So there you go.
Needs more cowbell. Always could use more
Always
cowbell.
Needs more cowbell.
We could use more radio, too. Let's wrap
cowbell.
Up. Let's wrap
Here we
up.
Go.
Mysterious Traveler. We'll be back.
Okay.
The days and weeks passed, and each was one of discovery, of new knowledge, of sights never before seen by human beings. Excitement grew ever increasingly greater as the flight distance to Mars lessened. Crew members would stand for hours before the flight vision screen scanning the planet we were bound for. At dawn of the 76th day, we approached Mars. The nuclear jet engines were cut. And as Mars drew us towards her orbit, we prepared to land. Stand by to land on Mars.
Attention, crew members. Stand by to land on Mars.
How quiet it is. It seems strange not to hear the engines after 76 days.
Yes. Switch on radox sender.
Switch on radox sender.
Instrument rating. Rate of descent, 1,000 miles per hour. Altitude, 300,000 feet.
The orbit of Mars is exerting a strong pull toward its surface.
Yes. Switch on retarding jet number one.
Switch on retarding jet number one.
Instrument rating. Rate of descent, 500 miles per hour. Altitude, 100,000 feet.
Once we enter Mars' atmosphere, it'll help cut down our speed.
We should be just about entering it now.
Rate of descent, 200 miles per hour. Altitude, 60,000 feet. Entering atmosphere. Pressure, 2 pounds.
That's much better.
Rate of descent, 100 miles per hour. Altitude, 20,000 feet. Pressure, 5 pounds. Hovering. Altitude, 1,000 feet. 800 feet. 600. 300. 100.
Flight completed. Cut retarding jet number one.
Cut retarding jet number one.
Cut radox sender.
Cut radox sender.
Well, Professor, we've done it. We've reached another planet and begun a new age.
Yes. Let's hope that as a result of this flight, atomic energy will be used for peace and not for war.
Well, shall we have a look at this planet? Switch on scanning screen.
Switch on scanning screen.
A moment later, a picture formed on the scanning screen, and we saw the landscape of Mars. As far as the eye could see, there was desert. Wide tracts of brown, barren soil broken here and there by ugly, thorny desert plants. Now and then, a gust of wind would come swirling across this desert, all but obscuring the view. There were no visible signs of life out there. Only great vastness. And great loneliness. It's just wasteland. Nothing but wasteland.
It reminds me a great deal of the deserts of Tibet.
Disappointing, isn't it?
Oh, come now. This is only a small part of Mars. Who knows what the countryside may be a few hundred miles from here?
Yes, that's true. The Martian canals, which we've studied through telescopes on Earth, now we'll be able to see them close up.
Yes, it's going to be a great adventure exploring this planet. Well, we'd better proceed with our preliminary test, Dick. Ascertain what the air out there is composed of, what the temperature is, and 101 other things.
I'll assemble our scientists at once, Professor, and have them go to work. We seem to have accumulated over 1,000 pages of scientific notes almost overnight, Professor.
Yes, we've accomplished quite a bit. The air out there is composed of 15% oxygen, 83.7% nitrogen, and traces of other gases.
Is that sufficient oxygen for us to live out there?
Yes, but you'll find yourself constantly gasping for breath. It'll be necessary to carry along pure oxygen and breathe it in now and then.
I see. When may we leave the ship?
I suggest we start this afternoon. I'll draw up a list of the equipment we'll need and... What's that?
Our radar alarm. Someone has broken through the radar system. Connors, what zone is this breakthrough from?
Zone 5, sir.
Zone 5. That means 250 miles away.
Connors, can you pick up anything?
I can hear something very faintly, sir. Sounds like motors.
Motors?
Well, it looks as if we've learned something else. Not only is Mars inhabited, but it apparently has a highly developed civilization.
Yes.
They're in Zone 4 now, sir. I can pick up the sound of motors quite clearly.
Zone 4. That means they'll reach us in another 3 minutes. Professor, you've seen my orders. In a situation such as this, I'm to take off and return to Earth.
Yes, I know. What a pity to have come so far and have to return now.
I know, but those are my orders. We can't risk the XIP and all the knowledge we've gained.
Yes, you're right.
Zone 3 has been penetrated, sir.
Stand by to take off.
Attention crew members, stand by to take off.
Cut off radar system.
Cut off radar system.
Cut in nuclear jet number one.
Cut in nuclear jet number one.
Cut in nuclear jet number two.
Cut in nuclear jet number two.
Week after week passed uneventfully as we traveled homeward. Already we were discussing the second flight we would make to Mars and the other spaceships that would be built to follow the path of the XIP.
Well, Dick, there's our own planet looming larger with each passing hour.
Yes. Another 48 hours and we'll be home. I imagine our return will create quite a stir.
Yes. I hope it won't delay us too long in preparing for our second flight.
Well, this flight of ours will have a tremendous effect on mankind.
Yes. And I'm hoping for the better. Mankind can't stand an atomic war. It would be the end of us all.
Well, look at the flight vision screen. Certainly, the Earth appears peaceful enough at this moment.
Yes, but a weapon such as atomic energy...
Professor!
What is it?
The flight vision screen. Look. Huge explosions on Earth.
What? Good Lord.
Look. One explosion after another. Great fires mushrooming up. What is it, an earthquake?
No, Dick.
Well, then what?
Those are atomic explosions.
What? Oh, no, no, they couldn't be.
I was at Los Alamos, Bikini. I've seen atomic explosions before.
Connors.
Yes, sir.
Establish radio contact with San Augustine.
Yes, sir. XIP calling base.
It's horrible.
San Augustine.
Horrible.
XIP calling base.
One explosion after another.
Come in base.
The whole Earth appears to be
San
in flames.
Yes.
Over.
It's the end of the world.
Now, don't talk like that. It can't be. Connors, what's wrong?
I don't know, sir. San Augustine doesn't answer. All I hear are explosions.
Good Lord. Why? Why?
Professor... The Earth seems to be disintegrating. Great fiery pieces are being blown into space.
It is disintegrating. The atomic explosions have started a chain reaction. In a few more seconds, the XIP will feel the impact.
You mean out here?
Yes, even out here.
Sound the alarm! All crew members to stations!
It's too late, Dick. Nothing can save us. The end of the world is us. Any moment now, there'll be a gigantic explosion, which will really...
When I regained consciousness, 12 hours later, I was lying in the radio compartment beside Connors, the radio man. My left arm and a number of my ribs were broken, and I had a slight concussion of the brain. I pulled myself to my feet and staggered into the command room. The nuclear engines were silent. The ship a shambles. The professor and seven other men in the command room had been killed almost instantaneously. I slowly made my way through one compartment after another. Out of a crew of 42, only Connors and myself were alive. I returned to the radio compartment. Hours later, Connors recovered consciousness. Following his instructions, I repaired the scanning screen and turned on a small auxiliary engine which was still in working order. A moment later, a picture formed on the scanning screen.
Is that the colonel?
Yes, Connors. What's left of it?
There are still huge fires burning.
Yes.
The whole face of the earth seems changed. I can't recognize any part of it.
Nor can I.
Colonel, what do you think happened?
I don't know. You and I will never know.
Do you suppose anyone could have lived through it?
No, Connors, no. No one could have lived through it.
I didn't think so. What are we going to do, Colonel?
Do? There's nothing we can do. The XIP is disabled. It'll remain here out in space. We have food and water for 6 months, possibly longer.
I wish I had gone with the others.
Oh, no, don't talk like that, Connors.
What will you do when you're alone, Colonel?
Alone?
I can't last much longer.
Nonsense, Connors. You're going to be all right.
Who are you kidding, Colonel? Me or yourself? It's a strange way to end up, isn't it?
Connors. I'm alone now, sitting here staring at the scanning screen. And as I look at that burning, unrecognizable planet once called Earth, the same question keeps running through my mind. What happened? And why? Why did the Earth explode in fire? Was there anything that I, Richard Werby, might have done to prevent that all-consuming holocaust? And I know that as long as I, the last survivor, live, I'll keep asking myself, why did it happen? Why?
Some dude tripped over a cord. That's why.
Bomber shelter.
This is the mysterious traveler again. Did you enjoy our trip? What's that, madam?
I did.
A fearful picture? I agree. Well, fortunately, it doesn't have to happen and won't happen if we don't want it to. And if... Oh, you have to get off here. I'm sorry.
Do it.
But I'm sure we'll meet again. I take this same train every week at this same time.
Listen for the mysterious traveler at its new time next Tuesday night at 7. Listen for Secret Missions next week at this time. And now stay tuned for the latest news. This is the Mutual Don Lee Broadcasting System.
In space.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's a pretty good story.
Promise.
I've got no argument with that.
A rather modern story for Mysterious Traveler.
For 49, yeah.
I wonder what we might learn.
Maybe something in space.
Erie House Radio proudly presents Gar's Moral of the Story. In space!
In space!
The best one-word answer to the question why is because.
In space.
It never worked with my four-year-old when he was four-year-old. Because was never the answer. Because they follow up with why? Because. Yep. Why? Because.
Yeah, and right. That's a never-ending battle.
No. Well, my parents, if they did that, if I did that why thing, they'd point at the Funkin' Wagnalls Encyclopedia set, said, "Go look it up, kid." And that did it. Right?
Well, we got five across the eyes.
Did you guys have a Funkin' Wagnalls Encyclopedia set in your home, or Britannica, or whatever it was?
No, we had a Compton's.
Okay. My mom got a book each week at the grocery store. I don't know if it was green stamps or it was you buy it for a buck for a purchase of groceries, or I don't remember what it was, but she got an entire set of the Funkin' Wagnalls Encyclopedia. And they ended up in my room, and they were like, "You want it? You got a question? Go read it up." There you go.
Yeah,
that was it.
That was quite a saying back in the 70s, I think. Look it up. But go look it up in your Funkin' Wagnalls.
Funkin' Wagnalls. Yeah. Now here's a curious thing.
It meant something differently that way, though.
Oh.
Well, Funkin' Wagnalls, they knew what pronouns were. But anyway. We're not going there.
Hello. Easy.
In the Mysterious Traveler, at the end, when the Earth, and that's a horrific thing, going back to your home planet that's got food and water and air and everything, and it blows up. Well, see, they found a society on Mars, so if they could paddle their way back or whatever.
But they ran away from them before they even had a chance to meet them.
Yeah. I know. Well, they need to turn back and go, are you taking in any orphans, because they know there's something going on there, So whether or not they could live there, we don't know. But, yeah, I have seen more than one science fiction thing where they go back to the Earth and someone blew it up. And it's like, oh, my, well, there you go.
Yes.
Forget about it.
Yeah, that's become a trope of sorts.
Yeah, because you only got so much oxygen in your little spaceship. In this story, part of the spaceship was blown up, so it doesn't really work that well. They might have food and water, but, it's just a matter of time before the batteries run down.
Yep.
We had a GG Sci-Paper said we had some sort of a set. That was a good idea, my Mr. and Mrs. Gar. Mr. and Mrs. I am not a Mr. and Mrs. I am Lord Garth Thaddeus Gernstein. Thank you.
They were just covering all the pronouns. You're good.
Oh, wait. That was a good idea, my Mr. and Mrs. Well, maybe they were talking about my parents, Mr. and Mrs. Garth. Yeah.
Yes.
That was good.
Yeah, where they made you look it up.
Yes.
I was in leadership patrol and scouts. One thing that they do, whenever you ask them a question, they say, look it up. Finally, you stopped asking questions because you just have to go look it up because they weren't going to tell you anyway.
Yeah.
Right. But there was a manual. There was a Cub Scout
know.
Or or
turns out they didn't know.
But there was
it
a Cub Scout manual,
sure,
if you recall. There was a Weeblos manual. There was a Bear manual. There was, I don't know what other, you know.
Yeah.
Okay, there you go. Yeah, see, G.G. Sidepiper says they met Mom and Dad Gar. My parents, they said, go look it up, kid. And there's what you, yeah, so there you go.
But now if you can't Google it, you can't be found.
Yeah, but what if you ask one of those embarrassing adult questions when you're young and innocent? Do they say go look it up? Jenny's got some magazines hidden in the bathroom. Go ahead and
look it up. They had an encyclopedia set of human relationships, and I was like, what? And they were like, go look it up there. It was like, it's not in Funko Magnum, it'll be there. And I was like, ooh.
Oh,
I mean, my parents were on the cutting edge. You know, they were like, you know, we don't want to, you know, my mom taught me how to cook and sew and look it up. There you go.
And punch out the neighbor. But, no, I'm kidding.
Yeah.
Or at least the guy from
Fisticuffs was, yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
Right.
In any who event, we got another good tale. Again, it's Rod Serling's Zero Hour, and this one stars Wilhelm Schattener. The toupee himself.
Wilhelm.
Wilhelm. This is a German version.
Wilhelm Schattener.
Yeah, German instead of Canadian, yeah.
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 Mm-hmm. And it's called Skylab. Are you there?
Uh-huh.
Not anymore, but maybe back then.
Which was when, by the way. When was it?
Did Skylab fall to Earth? Didn't it? I thought it did.
It did, yes. It did,
it did.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I think it went to Canada, but it landed politely there.
Politely. And then apologized. And then apologized.
Yes.
Okay.
And then learned how to play hockey. Yes, okay.
And suck sap out of trees.
Yeah, that too. Maple leaves. Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Maple leaves. Yeah.
We have an air date.
That's what I'm looking for. An air date.
The air date?
Skylab.
May 30th, 1974. There you go.
One more time I talked over you.
May 30th, 1974.
Episode 89.
I'm Rod Serling. You're listening to the Zero Hour. Rest your eyes. Exercise your imagination. Today, Keith Waters' double tale of terror in space. Skylab, are you there? Starring William Shatner. In a Mutual Broadcasting System presentation of The Zero Hour.
Brought to you by the Ford Motor Company, Shenley Industries, Matus Wine, Beechnut Chewing Tobacco, and Dial Soap. This is the Zero Hour on Mutual Radio.
There may be a possibility of layoffs.
I heard that one too. Well, I've been studying Dorothy Humor's great.
This is Hugh Downs with another car buyer's report from Ford. Comparing the total cost of ownership is the only way to be sure you get your money's worth when buying a new car. And Ford says there are three important considerations that make up the total cost of ownership: purchase price, operating economy, and trade-in value. Don't overlook that last one, trade-in value. I'd like to give you some interesting facts about trade-in that are difficult for the average consumer to come by. Like the fact that based on a national average of NADA wholesale prices, both the 1973 Torino and the 1973 Gran Torino returned more of their original purchase price than their closest sales competition. The facts speak for themselves. A solid, well-made car will generally return more at trade-in. Ford says that's one of the reasons why Torino is the best-selling car in its class.
The closer you look, the better we look.
Beyond the fragile envelope of air that protects this planet lurk many mysteries of the universe not yet revealed to us. But consider this. Perhaps they have been. But there is a decree from some higher authority that will not allow us to be told. What then?
How are you coming, John?
North Pole, they're tricky. Number 4 still won't extend. Wait, I thought I felt something move.
Anything?
No, for a minute then. I'll keep working. This is Houston. Do you copy?
Go ahead, Houston.
What is your status on the panel? Panel 2 and 3 now fully extended and operational. The arm on 4 panel is still askew in its channel. Roger, let us know if we should recompute any of your program. Wait, it's shifting.
John, what's wrong?
Telemetry on Colonel Amp's vital signs fluctuating erratically.
John, can you hear me? John! Pat, suit up. I'm going out.
Right.
Houston, are you copying?
Roger, Skylab.
Colonel Ebb is not responding, maybe injured. Dr. Kent and I are suiting up now. We will depressurize, and I will attempt to bring Ebb back in.
Roger, Skylab. Dick Conroy is on his way to the floor. He'll be taking over.
Pat, switch on your suit transmitter.
Can we both go out? No, you stay here and set up your surgery.
Skylab, this is Houston.
Dick Conroy, are you copying?
Roger, Dick. We are now depressurizing labs. Right,
Jack, Ebb's signs are weakening.
Roger, Houston. Stand by.
Houston, I'm setting up the mobile video scan server side.
We will monitor. Skylab, we are showing attitude change on the station. Can you advise?
Hold on. We'll check.
Houston, can you read the patch?
5x5, Jack.
I am drifting toward the capsule.
Houston, I can confirm. We're rotating laterally at 6 RPM. Also, slight horizontal rotation, but erratic.
Houston, it's possible that when the panel popped, its torque caused the station to spin.
That must be corrected immediately. Angle rotation will cause orbit decay.
Can you give me time brackets on delay correction?
Austin, set it up on the computer.
Roger. I can see him. The colonel tilted onto the extreme of his lifeline. John, can you hear me?
Pat, that's good on the camera. We're following visually.
Movement from Ebb. Almost there.
Vital signs very erratic.
I got him. Bring him in now.
Roger. Pat, can you take decay corrections?
I'm standing by surgery. Can you execute corrections from your station?
Roger. Set up on the board computer through Orient Circuit. We will feed.
Pat, coming in. Give me a hand. Here. Pressurize. We are inside. I'm going to say...
Transmitter, are you copying?
We are copying.
Jack, look at his chest.
Let's get his suit off. Houston, Colonel Ebb's on the table. Pat is examining him now. I am checking capsule.
Standing by, Scott.
Houston, Ebb has a massive chest conduction. Possibly 6 ribs shattered. 2 appears that they may have shifted into the heart wall.
Skylab, you will have to abort the mission.
Roger, Houston, I'm working on that now.
Pat, what a chance if we bring him down.
Better than if he stays here. The sooner the doctor...
Hold it, Pat. Houston, we have a problem. We cannot abort. I repeat, we cannot abort. Return capsule will not take pressurization, and number 2 fuel tank punctured.
Are you sure, Jack?
Positive, Houston. Fragments of the solar panel must have punctured capsule. We cannot return to Earth.
Matus is an old-world rosé wine people enjoy everywhere. Like down in the Delta, they know the blues are what you make it, and that the light, easy-to-like taste of Matus rosé makes the meal.
Hey, Matus rosé.
Man, on the West Coast, Matus is out of sight, but you see it everywhere. And in New England, Matus Rosé is perfect for that elegant evening on the town. Matus, the rosé wine that goes with everything good, anywhere, anytime at all.
Hey, 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 Matus Rosé.
Imported by Dreyfus Ashby & Company, New York, New York.
Mm-hmm.
Dick, here are the figures for the chute.
Good.
Dick, you're going to wipe yourself out.
Can the sympathy.
I'm sorry,
you're right.
These show the Saturn on pad 9 will be operational in 11 hours.
How about Eckert?
He's lucky. He just finished simulation. He'll be ready when we are.
Well, let's give the good news to Skylab. Potter, activate the link.
Hi, Mr. Conroe. This is Julie Azor.
Thanks. Skylab, this is Houston.
We are copying, Houston.
Is Jack monitoring?
Yes, sir. He's in the capsule, but pad.
We can mount a Saturn for rescue. We go to countdown in 30 minutes. Major Kenyon Eckert will be a command pilot. We are programmed for an 11-hour count, and if we get lucky... Wait a minute, strike that. We are lucky. We can rendezvous at 20 hours, 30 minutes.
Houston, we don't have much time. Colonel Ebb is critical, barely holding his own, still unconscious. Hart is getting very erratic readings.
We're all praying. Jack, do you copy?
Wait, Houston, no rush here. The capsule's worse than I thought. Even if I could get up pressure...
Houston, stand by. Colonel Ebb's heart has stopped. I'm attempting a journal and a heart rate.
Skylab, your transmission has been interrupted. Say again. Skylab, do you copy? This is Houston, Skylab. Are you there?
Yes, I'm getting telemetry on the lab, but...
But what?
You're not going to believe this. There is no telemetry on life signs.
That can't be.
See for yourself.
That's crazy. According to this, there's no one on the station.
Dick, they're locking down the hatch now.
All right. Let me know when Eckert comes up. And keep the press out. Have PR tell them we'll do a conference once Eckert's on his way.
Eckert.
Right. Major Eckert, Conroy, how do you feel?
Perfect. You're ready on a rush.
So do you. We are T-minus 30 and counting.
Roger, I'm ready to fly this bird.
So are we.
Anything new on station?
No, and we're not telling the press anything except we've got a communication problem. Remember that when you get on the command circuit.
Got it. That's hard to figure.
Got to be a simple explanation. But we know they're there. I know it.
Yeah. Well, where else could they be?
30 seconds and counting.
Second stage tanks now pressurized.
25 seconds.
Power transfer complete.
20 seconds and counting.
All systems go.
Guidance is now internal.
15 seconds.
Green. All systems green.
10. 9. Ignition sequence starts.
All systems go.
Looking good. 5. 4. 3. 2. 1. 0.
All engines firing.
Beautiful. T plus 10.
Now at 60,000, all reading green.
Coming up on second stage.
All readings still go for second stage.
Second stage firing, 10 seconds.
All right. All
right.
Way to go. Beautiful.
All right, all right, all right, all right. Take your seats. Calm down. I've got a prepared statement. Ladies and gentlemen, you'll have to take this as it is. I've got no time for questions. Here's the status. Major Eckert is approximately 1 hour from docking with Skylab. He'll transfer Colonel Ebb to the capsule and bring him back to Earth.
Well, yeah, but
now, hold it. Will you hold it, please? There's no reason to believe they're not up there. I know what's on your mind, but let me assure you, in all probability, there's been simply a communication failure. And that's all it is. Eckert's job is simply to return Colonel Ebb. That will give us a breather and time to figure out how to make the necessary repairs in the capsule. That's it.
Houston, I now have a matching orbit with Skylab.
Roger, rescue. What's it look like?
Like a tomb. No sign of life through the ports. I'm now depressurizing a capsule. I will walk across to the station. I'm now leaving capsule. I will secure a line to the station from the capsule.
Roger.
If you'll forgive the analogy, tying up like this makes me think of the horse and buggy.
Modern ingenuity, Major.
Approaching station hatch.
Austin, any change in telemetry?
Nothing, Dick. The suspense is killing me.
Yeah.
Houston, I'm inside the station. Houston, there's no one here.
Glad is what happens when you use Dial soap.
Aren't you glad?
It starts right out with a clean, fresh scent that's like nothing else.
In space.
To get you going, clean and fresh.
I'm not glad anymore.
Dial washes away the cause of odor on your skin. You just can't buy a better deodorant soap than Dial. And that's saying something.
I'm glad when other people use it.
That I'll buy.
I'm more glad when other people use Dial.
You know, yeah, exactly.
Especially them,
wash
what needs it
pits,
the most.
Yes.
Smelly,
wash those pits, you smelly thing, you. That's right.
That's right.
Then we'll all
stay
be glad.
Stay off my lawn.
And get off, yeah, that's right. Get off my lawn. Don't knock on my door.
Yeah.
Hey, do you guys realize that nobody in this world except our generation understands what the word solicitor means?
Yeah, people, that's true.
I have a sign on my front door, no solicitors. What did I get? Hey, yeah, I'm trying to sell something. You're a solicitor. Get out of here. What are you?
No, I'm not. I'm a salesman.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
You're a salesman soliciting stuff that I don't want.
There's something soothing about that to me.
Is there?
Yeah, it really
is.
You
just need an accordion and you're all set, Dale.
I just find that very soothing.
Did your parents yodel you to sleep at night?
I wouldn't call it yodeling. It was more like shrieking.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. My mom used to rock me to sleep.
Above the shrieking and the gunfire, there was yodeling. Okay, we get it.
Yeah, my mom used to rock me to sleep. Well, it wasn't really rock. I think it was a brick from the fire.
With a real rock.
Yeah,
that's right.
With a pet rock.
Yeah, you should have seen the rock.
Mm-hmm. That's no rock. That's a boulder.
Hey,
that's
hey,
no
keep
rock.
It
that's
clean.
My mom.
Keep it clean.
What?
I'll figure it out. You'll figure it out.
I'm confused, too.
I'll explain.
I'm not the normal one. Yes. You two guys are feeling normal. I have never felt normal in my life, so.
Yeah.
I have days where normal is wonderful. And then there are other days where it's like, oh, gosh, no, not again. Freaking migraines.
Yeah. No.
But the days I wake up and it's normal, it's like, it's party time. That's right.
God help the rest of us.
Exactly. Just to let you gents know, I'm on coffee cup number 3. Woohoo!
There ought to be a law. There ought to be a law.
There ought to be, but not in my house. I don't let nobody in.
I must say, I imbibe on the bean. I must say I do. I indulge in the bean.
Bean? Oh.
The bean.
Oh, yeah.
The bean.
Yeah. Well,
I'm not like
I know
Stan
you
the coffee
that
guy. Yeah, I'm not like him.
Right. I saw that. No, you like that silk something, satin something.
Black
dark
silk. It's called black silk.
Black silk.
Yeah.
Right.
Man, I think
and
I'm else makes that. Oh, no, Folgers. It's a Folgers. Yeah.
When I was growing up, all throughout the 70s and forward, my parents had chock full of nuts, and they always had chock full of nuts, and they, you know, as long as things were going good, chock full of nuts, and that's what I got, chock full of nuts. So
it's such heavenly coffee.
Yes.
Uh-huh,
My parents must have used it at some point because I remember my father's tool bench always had, like, nuts and bolts in a can full of chock full of nuts.
There you go. There
not
you
as
go
a gag,
yeah,
but they were, it was a useful container.
Quite appropriate.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, what I use it for this is I'll keep a can, and if a light bulb goes bad, it goes in the can, because you don't want to put a light bulb in the bin. You put it in a can with a lid.
I thought you throw them in the fireplace. Watch them explode.
I don't have a fireplace here. I wish when I move north, fireplace. Why? Santa Claus. That's the only reason. That's
another
reason
to come up north, man. Another reason to come up north
chimney.
And hang around with us.
Man, yeah. I have been beating the housing market. The housing market is starting, the numbers are starting to fall down. The interest rates are tumbling down. So maybe it'll turn into a buyer's market instead of a seller's market.
Yeah.
It's just crazy, the numbers that are out there.
Could be. Let's wrap up Skylab. Yeah, Skylab. Are you there?
Skylab?
Are you there? Are you there?
Wait.
In space?
Huh? What? Yep. In Skylab.
I'll do it.
Hello? There we go.
Rescue, this is Houston.
Go ahead, Houston.
You want to prepare for return. We're reprogramming for reentry, and we'll feed the data shortly. We have several assignments for you to accomplish before then.
I'm copying.
Set up the cabin for video scan. We're going to fine-tooth comb on video for examination. Also have the infrared adapter ready. Then pull all film from the analyzers and transfer to your vehicle.
Roger. Video scan is now operating. Take it anytime.
Switching now. Major Eckert, are you sure you switched the scan to inboard relay?
Roger, Houston. I show fire on the equipment.
Okay, stand by one. Dick, can you come here?
What do you got?
A carrier wave, but no picture. It's almost as if there's some strong energy source blocking transmission.
Slide over. I'll use your board. Eckert, check your gamma analyzer now.
Aye, aye. Doing it now.
Real.
Hey, that's high, Conroy. About 5/12 interior.
Okay, stand by.
What do you think you've got?
Mr. Hunts. Crazy. Probably nothing. Eckert, I want you to set up the infrascanner for interior.
Can do. Give me a minute.
Right, and when you've got it set, patch it through the board and scanner circuits. Austin, switch the feed to the board scope. Working.
Relay now.
What was that?
Houston, what are you getting at? No monitor.
Eckert, now listen carefully. I want you to pan the scanner left to right and freeze when I say.
Panning.
I've never seen anything like it. Freeze scan.
Impossible. How?
Houston, what have you got?
Major, we are looking at our Skylab team, plus there is one human form with them.
You mean they're up here with me?
The way it looks, the infra images are very hazy, but I'm sure it's Pat Kent, Jack Elton, and Colonel Ebb. The other form is gesturing and pointing towards the scanner.
Oh.
We've lost the scan. Austin, are you all right?
Yeah. Just lots of spots before my eyes.
Rescue, this is Houston. We're getting no visual on infra. Switch back.
Houston, this is Colonel
Ed. John? Is that you?
Very much so, Dick. Alive and well.
How? Pat said your heart stopped.
Dick, I must request that we discontinue conversation. Would you please go to scramble on the priority circuit?
Roger. Switching now.
Scott, your read.
Roger, Houston. Dick, we've been requested to keep the following information secret, at least for a time. Pat will fill you in on the beginning sequences.
Houston, what has happened is truly without medical precedence. Colonel Ebb was brought back to life. But the Conroy, we have been watched.
Watched? What do you mean?
At the moment, the Colonel's heart stopped. There was a blinding light shift in the lab. It was accompanied by a physical wrenching, almost as if our lives had shifted in time, which in fact it did. A humanoid, was suddenly in the lab with us. She told us it had been ordered to return Colonel Ebb to life.
I'll take it, Pat. Houston, the alien's name was Hobb. It left a message for us to play as explanation. Jack is integrating it into your circuits. Are you receiving visual?
Yes. What is that thing?
They call it a communicube.
A tape recorder?
In a way. As they explain it, the cube projects audio and visual into any receiver, electronic or the mind. Stand by.
Hop is my designator. I am a special monitor assigned to your planet. For the past 600 years, it has been my duty to observe and report your progress toward space exploration. I represent, in your reference term, the Council of Worlds, a higher order civilization of 2,000 world planets. The Council is responsible for admitting new worlds into the Federation when they have attained a proper civilized level. Your planet has not yet attained that status. As the observer, I am gifted with the ability to read alternate futures. When the death of Colonel Ebb occurred, it changed the future course of Earth's progress. This could not be allowed, and thus the Council gave permission for re-life. To explain, Colonel Ebb will be the dominating personality responsible for your reaching the civilized status for membership. Will also be needed for future contact and space exploration. You are advised, under maximum penalty, to hold this information in absolute secret. Under no circumstance is this to be broadcast to the people of Earth at this time. This is Hob. We will be waiting.
John, is that all?
Yes. The cube has disappeared.
Hob's words did not record. And we had to tell them.
The Council's instructions were very specific. Only that Skylab had a problem with its solar panels and power. That is all.
Under penalties. I hate to think what they might be. Prepare for return to Earth, Skylab.
Roger, Houston. We hear you.
Smaller every day, but there are certain things you still do. Still say what you think, you still pay for the drinks and beach nuts, the tobacco you chew. Weird ideas taking hold, kids won't do what they're told. Who knows what this whole world's coming to? But you keep your face to the wind, you don't quit on a friend and beach nuts, the tobacco you chew. Seems like a man's world just isn't the same anymore, but some things you can still trust, like beech nut chewing tobacco. Beech nut just keeps on getting better. Beech nut's a lot moister these days, with more taste, less stems. Today's beech nut, fresher, longer-lasting flavor. You ought to try it. Girls in bars, girls in pants, the man just don't stand a chance, but there's still ways to show them who's who. Treat your dogs with respect, you keep your traps oiled and checked, and beech nut's the tobacco to chew.
I'm Rod Serling. Close your eyes, exercise your imagination, and join us again on our next presentation of The Zero Hour.
Skylab, Are You There? Is an original radio drama written by Keith Walker. William Shatner was heard as Richard Conroy. Featured in the cast were Jacques Denbrough, Kathleen Cordell, Casey Kasem, Les Tremaine, and Jack Cushing. Zero Hour, created by J.M. Collis. Directed by Don Hills, is produced in Hollywood for the Mutual Broadcasting System by Radio Productions Incorporated. Music is composed and conducted by Stanley D. Hoffman, Michelle Sherman, Associate Producer. This has been a presentation of the Mutual Broadcasting System.
This has been a presentation of the National Football League. Oh, nope. Oh, there we go.
The heck?
Skylab. Oops, I forgot Dave. Dave.
What?
Nothing.
What? In space.
Dave's in space.
Yeah, in space.
And finally.
In space.
Eerie House Radio proudly presents Scar's Moral of the Story in Space.
In hindsight, growing pains weren't all that painful.
Now wash your hands.
That's right.
You better wash your hands.
That was fun.
It's nasty out there.
How often did you guys watch some of the space shots? You know, like Apollo. What's the earliest one you remember?
As a kid, it was. I want to say late 60s. Did we have one in the late 60s?
Oh yeah,
yeah, we did. Yes, we had
lot of Apollo flights.
Yeah, so,
in the late 60s.
Right, and I saw those on Walter Cronkite was doing the play by play. I think.
Yes, he was, because that's the way it was. Absolutely.
That's the way it was in space. Yeah, so did.
How about you, Dave? How was your in space experience for?
You know what, I'm trying to think, you know, I like the shows, the you know, the Lost in Space and programs like that. The actual space shop, my parents got me up to watch the landing on the moon of Apollo 11. After
right.
that, I think I saw more than I did, because they worked up a lot. They went through the Gemini and that was covered, but it wasn't until Apollo 11 that intrigued, that really got my imagination going. And I did catch several after that. I remember Apollo 13, that was one where they had the trouble. When we were in elementary school, they wheeled the television into the one television they had in the school, into the auditorium, which doubled as, you know, the auditorium and the lunchroom we watched it, and there was Walter Cronkite, and he was explaining how if they didn't see anything come through in the next 60 seconds, then they would not have a successful reentry. And they just, the camera was just staring there. Nobody was saying anything. It was the longest 60 seconds in the history of television, I think. And finally it came through and everybody cheered. So,
yes. I think I have vague memories of the same thing. I think that was like a CATV cable thing that they had in the schools, where you had this one school, they rolled it out on these wheels. It was way up in the air.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
We would sit like in a gathering area in the school and watch. I think I remember some of the late Gemini. And when they had the model kits when I was a kid, I always thought the Gemini looked the coolest. I thought I had the cool nose.
I don't remember I can't remember any of the names, like you said, Gemini and Mercury or whatever they were. I don't remember
Apollo,
that. And it was a very early memory. I remember being at home as a kid and watching it on the TV the TV was actually in a TV stand in the house.
Mm-hmm.
It was black and white. And
oh yeah.
And that was where I saw it. So I was still, I'm a wee bit younger than you guys. Not much. But
you are.
I was at home.
A couple of years,
5 years, maybe?
Couple three.
I don't know. But
Couple three.
And so I was still a little bit younger, and I was at home for whatever reason. I don't have a whole lot of memories of it, but I remember that.
It was an exciting time for the United States. You know, we were getting out there in space, and gosh, before we knew it, we were on the moon.
Finally beating them Ruskies at something.
Yeah.
Right. But what do you guys take on this? Because I have a friend of mine, and he came up with the conclusive answer for this. But there are people out there that think that the moon landing was videotaped in Hollywood or something like that. And
no,
the answer
no,
to
no,
that,
no,
that,
no.
that breaks it up is two words, moon rocks. We have moon rocks.
Here's
that
the thing,
not,
you know,
come
I asked, when all this started to come out and there were all these doubts and this and that, I asked Dr. Bob, I said, what do you think about this? And he says, David would have taken as much or more technology to fake it than to actually do it. And here's the thing about that, too. You think the Russians wouldn't have cried foul if they weren't following it on monitors
True.
And on
good point
and on satellite and things like that?
That
you
is
know,
a great
they
point.
They would have been screaming foul. You didn't go. We can and yep. we can prove it.
So yeah. now there are three answers: moon, rocks, and Russians. That's the three.
Yeah, that's right.
Answers. There you go. We've solved it here on Erie House Radio.
We invented it first. We invented space
yes.
travel first.
Dave, I want to ask you, because I wasn't clear about this. Tomorrow evening at 6, is that what, 5:30? When do you guys start tomorrow?
We start at
6:30. 6:30, same time.
6:30, okay.
Same bad
and,
time,
and
same bad channel.
Right. Yep. Tomorrow's feature is Houston, Do You Read? By James Tiptree Jr.
Yes.
And
right.
where did this come from, Dave?
Yes.
It came from a program called Sci-Fi Radio. I have the date for it as well. But, yeah.
I didn't get any of that information. Sci-Fi.
Now, the
Sci-Fi
idea to play it came from our own lovely and delightful. CW is a fan of the writer of the story.
Yeah.
Tiptree is a nom de plume, if you will.
William
Shatner.
Yeah, no.
Not a William Shatner.
No, yeah. of a lady. She wrote it at a time where it was extremely difficult for females to get jobs writing science fiction. So she created this.
Or even get published as a female science fiction writer. Yeah.
Yeah. So she ran with that.
Became James. She became a him.
Her. Yeah. And it was like a deep, dark. Well, in those days, I guess maybe it was a little dark, but it was a deep secret that this person was a female.
But we're talking 1976. It was difficult for women in the field, 1976?
I would say.
Okay.
CW is going to tell us more tomorrow, I am sure.
Yeah.
So if you can listen in between while you're slapping makeup on, check it out.
Yeah.
I was talking to the folks at home, but I guess that goes for you, too. If you're slapping makeup on, guys.
Yeah, if you're slapping on makeup at home, you go ahead and tune in. And we'll tell you, the James Tiptree Jr.'s nom de plume was Alice Cramden. No, I mean Alice Sheldon.
Yes.
I'm kidding.
Yeah. But the world at large did not know this for a long, long time.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And then mentioned it. Yeah, when I she mentioned it and I found this, I'd realized I'd listened to this before and never, you know, to us, it doesn't matter who writes as long as it's quality, right? Well, I just had no idea that a woman had written that.
And then in 1978, someone said, is James Tiptree cross-dressing? No, that's Alice Sheldon. Anyway.
Nope. Well, we are, or at least I am, so, but...
I am not cross-dressing. No, I'm sorry, I don't do
none
that.
None of your damn business. Well, I am. It feels good.
Okay. Well,
I'm going to turn into the Ed Wood of radio.
I'm not
you
dressing
be you,
at all.
Mr.
This is radio.
Mr.
Yeah, naked radio.
Uh-oh, Dave's not wearing pants.
So tomorrow, 6:30 Eastern, it's us. With Houston, Do You Read? It's a radio play of novella by James Tiptree Jr., who isn't a dude. We will be... And then, after that, at 8 o'clock, it's Horrible Horror starring...
Carla Gold.
Carla Gold. Yes.
Tablet.
Label.
Label. Bring me a black label or something.
Uh-huh. Ooh, yeah.
Yes.
The castle Alice Sheldon,
lights
tomorrow.
Are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him.
Sheldon.
When next we meet in Frankenstein.
In space.
In space.
Don't come alone.
Bring it
in space.
Can you dig it?
I can dig it. I can dig it. I really dig it, dig it, dig it.
Dig it, dig it, dig it.
Wow.
I don't know why.
In space, we cry.
Yes.
In space, no one can hear you cry.
You know what? You ought to talk to your producer. You know, when can you dig it? And I go, oh, I can dig it. I can really, really dig it. Your producer uses a lot of Ray Stevens stuff that is obscure. Like your movie theme, that's from Ray Stevens' Saturday Night at the Movies. And that I dig it. I really, really dig it. That's from Ray Stevens' Bridget the Midget, the Queen of the Blues.
Yeah.
And he would know
Big
that.
Chuck and Bridget the Midget?
With yeah.
Little
that
John.
Was John's
that?
First. That was Little John's first skit.
Yeah. He was dancing
and
on
the table.
He
almost didn't do it because he had to cross over the Cuyahoga from the east side over to the west side to do it. So he took a bunch of his buddies. So a gang of him went over there to do it.
And he cross-dressed for that.
He did. He did.
Yeah. Yes, he did. There's no shame, folks. Let it all hang out. I like Angora.
Or not.
But,
you know, you don't want to get arrested, so you know, don't let it hang out that much.
No.
You know?
I don't think they arrest
them.
Yeah, that's
why
they
only do it in front of the microphone, you know.
Yeah.
Nobody can see it.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, my camera's still on. Whoops.
My cat's looking at me kind of weird right now. Giving me one stink eye there.
My
like,
webcam is working. Oh, no.
Uh-oh.
Right.
Cover your eyes. Cover the kids' eyes.
Yeah. I was told this week by Cox Cable, we finally repaired the last damaged segment of cable that's been dysfunctioning for 9 months. Finally, you know, and so now everything's better. And
really?
I'm like, I'm still getting conflicting data, but I'm checking it out. I would say it's improved, but not perfect. So I'll see what happens.
There's nothing perfect in this world, buddy. If you want something perfect, you must go out in space.
Well,
there's one perfect thing. Erie House Radio.
Erie House Radio.
Yes,
a
perfect mess. Yes.
Every performance
we give
is flawless.
Okay.
Did you
say
flawless or flawed? Did you say flawless or flawed? That's what
I did.
It's on the floor. Yeah,
I did say that.
It's flawless.
I would not lie. I
in
said
space.
That.
I ran across a curious thing, and I'm gonna fix it, and it's gonna be amazing. Is I have a computer, and I've had this computer since like 2003, and it was still running, and it stopped running. And I was like, oh, gosh. Well, I'm a computer guy, so I opened it up and looked at it. Bigger than anything, there are four capacitors on the board that are bad. And so what it means is I can take some soldering iron, unsolder them from the motherboard, and then replace them. It costs like $2 for a little capacitor, right? So maybe 10 bucks. And the computer will snap back to life and work again. That's not bad. Huh?
And you'll be able to say, it's alive! It's alive!
It's alive!
It's alive!
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's amazing to be able to do that. That's kind of a, like, wow. So that's something on my list of things to do.
A possible word of the week, honorifics.
Oh, yeah. Honorific. Yeah, I ran across that. Where did I find that? I was watching a Japanese cartoon. And they're very formal about, there's like a division of a caste system or a class system. And, you know, you're supposed to, you know, say certain, everyone has a title, unless
very respect-driven.
Right.
In their
I ran across this honorifics thing, and I was like, well, you know what? I just bought that
5-foot by 5-foot piece of property in Scotland, making me a lord. And I was like, you know, that would be a kind of a fun word.
Yeah. Did you really buy property in Scotland?
Yeah.
I got a plot number.
You only have to buy like a square foot to be called a lord.
Yeah, it's like 5-foot by 5-foot. That's what it is.
That's too small to even get buried in. You're going to have to get cremated.
Oh, I know. No. They're going to plant a tree there. It helps the ecosystem of Scotland. They plant a tree there. And
you may take
Dave,
the
I think
tree,
you were saying
but you'll
that,
never take my freedom. Oh, go ahead.
That's right. Yeah, out of my cold, dead branch. Dave said, well, I said there's no sales tax there. And Dave said, no, but there's a tree tax, and I'll pay that later.
Yeah.
So I'll find,
tree
just
tax.
Try.
Well, they got to find me.
Collect.
Yeah, they got to find me. But no, so it said that because of this, I can actually have documents. Like, I can get it put on my driver's license. Lord Darth Thaddeus Kernstein. Yeah, whatever. Or I could have it on my tombstone. On my tombstone. Lord Darth Thaddeus Kernstein. Or whatever.
That's nice.
That's what it says.
Lord.
You know.
T. Gernstein.
Yeah. Yeah. Lord G.T. Gernstein. That's it. Good old G.T.
Thanks.
We knew
G.T.
him well.
Yes. Quite the coffee drinker.
Yeah.
You're not too bad. You're not like flying.
Flying?
Yeah. Sometimes that coffee hits you and you're off the air.
I'm exhausted.
You're off the charts.
Yeah.
I had a long day. Thank
you. I took a nap before the program, and then I woke up like 10 minutes before. I was like, oh, okay. What planet am I on? And then I started to imbibe the bean, as you say.
Mm-hmm. The bean.
And I'm still ready to go back to bed. I'm like, man. I went to the Sam's Club. I went to the Walmart. Then I went back to the Sam's Club. And then I came home. But the Sam's Club is like on the other side of town from me. So it's like a 30-minute road trip to get there. And
yeah.
30 minutes back. But that's a big day for me. I typically am very grounded and stay in the house.
I'm a bit of a house mouse, but when it starts getting real nice outside, I can't stand it. But it's different when you're in Ohio, Gar. You got good weather pretty much most of the time.
Right.
Where we get about 3 to 4 months of nice.
Yeah, I was complaining because they're putting out the lights and stuff, but it's like 80 degrees outside. Now, it's supposed to be dropping down into the 50s, maybe into the 40s, something like that. And then it's nice to go out driving and see the stuff. But, you know, it's not going to – it will get into the 30s, but that's not until next month or the month after. And it just stays there for like 2 hours. So it's like, here's your 30 degrees, and then up, see you later. And then, you know, it's back up to 50 or something. And the winters are becoming milder, yes?
Hard
to say.
In general, yeah. I would say in general a little bit, yeah. We get hit every once in a while where it's not a consistent thing. I remember in January, Dale, you know, back when I was working at the York Steakhouse, we had so many days it didn't get above freezing, or in some cases couldn't get it above zero so many days. So, yeah.
You're talking about your Buffalo days?
No, I'm talking about the year when I was at early 80s even.
Yes, there were some.
Because, you know, we had the big blizzard in 78, you know.
Yeah.
Yes.
I went driving in that stuff. I'm an idiot.
I was, again, younger than you guys a little bit. But in 1977, 78, the blizzard, it affected where I was because I was up north. And we were out of school for like a month or two. I mean, we were, they couldn't, we didn't, they didn't have the snow clearing equipment in the 70s that we had gathered in 2023. So we were out of school for, it felt like 2 months. It was crazy. It was sledding every day. And snowman and all that stuff. And snowball fights. Oh, boy.
Not too bad to go to school, but not too bad to play in the snow. Yeah.
Oh, we touched on mood rings. Did you guys, and I know you guys are probably not into this, and I was, did you guys ever get the Barnabas Collins ring? Because
no.
He had a ring.
I
he had this
not.
Big.
I did not.
Oh, okay.
I did not.
Yeah, I was not into Dark Shadows.
Oh, okay.
As a kid. I could watch it now, a little bit of it.
Oh, gosh, it's horrible now. Because you're an adult, and you're watching it. They flub their lines. There's bad lighting. You can see shit. It was just, it's really rough. But back in 1968, it was amazing. Scared the heck out of me. And they didn't even bring in the vampire for almost like 6 months to a year of its inception.
Yeah, that's true.
Barnabas
didn't
show
up. It was too soapy for
me.
It was just too soapy.
Yeah.
Oh, it was absolutely soapy. Oh, it was, yeah.
Yeah. And I realized it was a kid's soap, but still, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know that. I don't know who it was aimed to. I don't know that it was aimed to kids. Was it soap opera for
kids?
Yeah.
It was on like 4 in the afternoon. So, yeah, it was aimed at kids.
You got to remember,
kids aren't buying
it was on right after General. It was on right after General Hospital, you know. Come on.
Yeah. And you got, yeah, a segue into the good stuff, maybe. I don't know. But if you remember, Gar, that era was really the era of, and I consider all three of us to some degree, maybe not Dave so much, as monster kids, because we were inundated with all kinds of horror stuff. You had your Addams Family and Munsters. You had all these trading cards, we called them bubblegum cards then, with the creature features,
right.
With the funny captions, which is where I got the idea from our little ads. What else did you have? You had monster magazines. You had monsters in the comic books. You had Frightenstein. You had all this stuff. And I think they were tapping into that market as well as maybe some of the soapy people and just trying to do something different. I don't know.
1960s, you had the Soakies,
the
Colgate Palmolive Soakies that I got here on the shelf.
And of course, the Horror Host.
Yeah, the Horror Host, they were really strong. And then, 1972, 1973, 8-inch fully clothed your action figures, all the monsters. And then in the 80s again, Universal, boom, all of them. I have those.
Well, yeah, and the
here.
Aurora model kits.
I talked to
a friend of mine recently, and he's not a monster guy at all, but he's a model guy. And as a kid, he had the original model kits of, what is it, the skeleton and the prisoner and the wolf, not the wolf man, but what was the one? I think they had the phantom, they had the hunchback.
They had the phantom, they had the hunchback.
And he just loved them, and he had them, and he's a very skilled modeler, but he refuses to do models for other people, because I would love to hire him to put together my Jupiter 2 and the ship from Forbidden Planet. Those are so cool, they're so big, and I don't want to screw them up.
Yeah.
Why not do that? I don't know if you ever thought about this, but instead of using model glue, use rubber cement.
Yeah.
Then if you drop it on the floor, it bounces right back.
It's when I get the hammers the problems start.
In space.
I did pretty good with Rat Fink, but it was one of those snap-together kits, you know what I mean? It was like 7 pieces to it. Big deal. But I painted it okay, I guess. Not horrible.
You know, I put a car model together once, and so I painted it. I didn't like the way I painted it, so I thought, I'll just soak this in some turpentine.
Oh, no. And it melted the whole thing?
It melted, yeah. It melted the whole thing.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I brutalized a Millennium Falcon when I was like in my mid-20s. Maybe it's like golf. I'll be more calmer when I retire. Because I could not play golf in my 20s, but once I got into my 30s, I was chilling enough where I can enjoy this game. I had no patience for the game when I was a youngin.
I can see you just sitting there, lamp on, workbench, big bowl of raisins, you know.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Keep just slowly going at it.
I'll have a space for it.
One bowl of raisins. One bowl of rubber cement, yeah. Except that the only problem with rubber cement, rubber, weird thing. People were sniffing model glue, right? And mm-hmm. and there was a guy.
Thankfully, that's something I never did. I just thought it was too stupid to.
Susan St. James's.
I just waited for mimeograph sheets to come out. I made
that was some good sniffing. Oh yeah.
I had one
Give
of those crank machines
stuff,
at the house,
man.
Yeah, it was purple. That Susan St. James's father. There's a little story about that sniffing glue. Is they were having a problem with the sniffing glue. He and some other people were at a restaurant, and they wanted some horseradish. And this one guy said, I know where the strongest horseradish is ever. And so they sent out for it, and they brought it in, and they said they tried it. And it was like nobody could eat it. It was too strong. And they noticed it had this horrible smell, like, oh my God, it's horseradish. And so what they did is they combined horseradish with the model glue, and then – that ended it because nobody could you couldn't smell it. If you have a strong enough horseradish sauce and you smell it, the insides of your nostrils hurt. So
yes,
you know, you
real horseradish is some good stuff, man.
And then you cry, you know. It's like
It's like the Mexican, the hot pepper things. People like to abuse themselves. It's like a sign of being macho,
I've seen some stuff with the hot, and it's insipid. I wouldn't do it, you know. Like
you could destroy your plumbing with that stuff. It's like worse than green. It doesn't hurt one day. Let's put it that way. It doesn't just hurt going in.
It hurts going in, and it hurts coming out. Yes,
it does. It's horrible.
I never wanted to turn myself into a flamethrower. So, no, I'm not,
Honey, why have you been sitting in the bathtub all day?
I took my roommate to a Chinese restaurant, and they have Chinese mustard. And I know about Chinese mustard. You use it very, very little. It goes a long way.
Sparingly,
Chinese frickin' mustard. Well, this guy had some Hispanic roots to him, and I think something like that. And anyway, so he takes a big, like, tablespoon and starts slopping it on whatever it was. And he goes, and then he stopped moving. He became immovable. And then he ran to the restroom. And I was like, yeah, buddy, that's going to sting for a while. And then absolutely stopped moving. Like he couldn't move, like deer in headlights. And I was like,
I got your jalapenos
okay?
right here. I got your jalapenos right here.
Forget about. It was just wow.
My God.
So Chinese mustard, a wee bit stronger than the spicy stuff of, of that other.
There are some horrible peppers. I had the opportunity to try. I think they're called goat, not ghost, but
ghost
peppers.
Goat
peppers.
Goat.
It only grows on a few islands somewhere in the Caribbean, I believe. And this girl I worked with when I was working for a banking institution, whose name I shall not mention because they're not paying me. and they were bloody hot. I mean, It was a little bit went a long way. They warned me, thankfully.
Right.
They weren't pranksters. Her husband would jar them, get them from his home country. And
right. I don't have any problem with, say, Chinese ginger. There are some stuff out there that makes that stuff just go, we give up, we're done, no.
Yeah.
And again, why do that to yourself? I don't know.
I don't know, but it's not limited to one culture. India, they have some really hot foods.
They have like a curry that is like
curry.
Really bad, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I like some of the Indian food.
I'm sorry.
Some of the curry stuff. I like some of the curry stuff. I can handle that.
Yeah.
Standing near or been near someone that is cooking the curry? Because that stuff is, I can't be near.
Goes
it.
Right through. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm like, no, it's like a cloud that I'm like, no, I'm backing
it's
up.
It's in
backing
your pores.
Up. I'm like. Now, we years ago, I had an apartment. Ours was downstairs, and there was an Indian family up north, upstairs, and they were cooking their stuff, and they opened all the windows and stuff. And I was like, what is that? Oh, what? Oh, boy, boy, that was rough. And,
Mighty
Joe, I'm staying in my apartment.
Hello,
Mighty Joe, boy, boy. Now, wait, is that the cat? That's the cat,
yeah.
Right?
Mighty Joe is
yeah,
the cat.
Yeah.
Meow, meow. There we go. Okay.
Yeah, he's...
I apologize for my I forget. So what's your dog's name?
Pal. Paladin.
Cujo?
Pal for short.
Paladin. Oh, yeah, there we go. Yeah. Cujo.
Paladin.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Where do you...
Yeah, he has a card. Yeah, another, yeah. Whatever that was.
Yeah.
Is the name on the card? Is that what it said? Paladin Paladin is the name on the card. No, I forget. I don't know what it is.
Something like that.
But
that's the TV version. The John Daner was different. It had like this real exciting theme. For Have Gun Will Travel. Have Gun Will Travel.
For radio it was John
Daner.
For TV it was Richard Boone. On TV,
yes.
That was one of the few shows where radio actually copied television. It was already on television before it came to radio.
That was unique. Town, really?
Yeah.
That was weird. Okay, that's weird. And Dale, being a monster guy, what movie, monster-wise, was Richard Boone in?
I Bury the Living. No.
I Bury the Living. Yeah.
I Bury the Living.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. What Richard Boone film in color was he in? How about that?
Big Jake? No, not Big Jake. Was it Big Jake? No.
No.
Rooster Cogburn.
What? No. He was in a movie,
Big Jake.
No.
I remember he was Heck Ramsey on one of those Mystery Wheels.
Yep.
On, I think, the Tuesday Mystery Wheels.
He was
Heck Ramsey.
There was a movie where... They find a way and tunnel into a no man's land, and there's dinosaurs in it. I think it was called The Last Dinosaur, maybe. And he is trying to kill
the right.
Tyrannosaurus Rex.
I think you're right.
Was he in The Last Dinosaur?
Yeah. And, yeah, he's the culprit, bad guy, whatever. I saw it late at night, like, it was like 11:30. The Lucy show was on as a rerun, and then after that, The Last Dinosaur. And I watched it. And I was like, "Oh my gosh!" And this was in the 70s, sometime. And I was like, "Wow!" Stuck with me. And it's a good one because there's no nudity in it. It's okay for TV, so yeah, it's fodder for me. There's no cussing in it or anything.
Joey, jeez, he's grabbing me.
Time
wow,
to get off
being,
the phone,
being,
Dad.
No, I think he wants to go out. I think he wants to be on the show. Dude, it's radio.
Oh, okay.
You don't say much. Yeah, you don't say. He doesn't meow much either. Purrs a lot.
Ah, that's fine. Well, there you go. Yeah, that was one I remember that was in the 70s that stuck with me. I don't have a lot of stuff that sticks with me, but that one did.
You know, he was one of those people that Richard Boone was one of those people that did not have, like, a perfect complexion, you know?
Right.
He had a real rugged a face, especially as he got older, of course. But, I mean, he still made a fine career. And not so much as a character actor like a Jack Elam type, who also had an imperfect face. Or at least imperfect eyes, but... He played some very epic roles, either as a villain or as a comic relief character.
Yeah, He did that one series where he played like a Frankenstein. He liked it because he didn't have to wear makeup for that.
Yeah.
I don't think it lasted very long. Only because it was named did it maybe even last a full season, you know.
I think I have memories of that, though. I can picture him as a Frankenstein-type character.
Yeah. And he liked it because he didn't have to do makeup for it.
Oh, I would love to have seen him in a movie with Marty Feldman. Now there's a pairing. There you go.
Feldman.
That would be fantastic.
Well, you put them side by side, they'd be looking at each other.
Yeah. They could be staring straight ahead, and they'll be looking right at him. Be perfect.
Right.
Perfect, I say.
Yeah. For Halloween, I put on a Frankenstein topper and included it as my outfit. It worked out pretty good. But, yeah, lots of makeup on my side.
Good.
Whole lot of makeup.
Make yourself
except
perfect.
On radio.
Oh,
right.
Yep. A whole lot
slacker.
Of
slacker.
I should definitely spend 4.5 hours putting on makeup for radio. I think that would work.
I think. It,
yeah, there you go.
No, I almost, yeah.
So CW was the one that found this Houston, do you read? Is that right?
Yeah, I'd heard it before, but I didn't realize it was a woman of the female type that wrote it.
I went digging for it, trying to find information. I couldn't find what I was looking for.
Well, you had her name, though, so there's...
Yeah, that, when it was written in 1976, I didn't know it was sci-fi radio. Is that what you said, Dave?
No, it was a novella she wrote, and then it was... made into a radio program.
Right. But Dave, didn't you say it was sci-fi radio? Was it? Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. I got something I can pull from.
Oh, yeah, that's the name of the show, yes. Yeah.
I couldn't find it. I was like, where did this come from? and so I didn't get the blade of grass, but I was stymied on the – I was trying to listen to it and get his name, and I get her name as a him, and I was like, tippy toe, tippy tree, what? I didn't know what it was. Tippy Hedren with the lions and tigers and bears. Oh my,
That's her. That's the one.
Have you guys gone full tilt into the Santa Claus or what?
No. Just start.
Really?
Scratching the surface.
Yeah, actually.
How about you, Dave?
We're getting ready for our third annual Christmas music song parody. And this time we're doing Vince Vance and the Valiants, All I Want for Christmas is You, and we've changed it to All I Want for Christmas is Doe.
Yep.
So when are you putting
like
up?
That.
Dave puts up a tree every year, and it's decorated in meatloaf. Right, Dave?
It is. We have little meatloaf hanging off of it. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's the meatloaf that was left over from Thanksgiving. It's the meatloaf that was left over from Thanksgiving, right, Dave? That was
Meatloaf?
Just hang it on the tree.
Yeah, the Thanksgiving meatloaf we had left over, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Meatloaf?
What's that? Okay. All right.
Every time that theme gets on, I get a nickel. Yep, yep.
Do you know Denise's bird?
And a slice of meatloaf.
Denise's bird whistles. She whistles that once in a while from commercials.
Does she?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm telling you this. No, the cat, the African gray parrot we have. We have an African gray parrot.
Wait, you tortured that parrot with that whistle. So
no,
it whistles sometimes.
She picks stuff up from TV, like during the Addams Family, when they go da 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 da. She makes this clicking sound, click click, da 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 da.
Click click. Oh
yeah.
And she does it.
There it is, Dale.
In time.
There it is, Dale. Full 5 episodes of Jack Elam Struck by Lightning from 1979. It lasted a total of 5 episodes.
Oh,
I'll bet I saw one of them. I'll bet I saw one.
A science teacher, Ted Stein, inherits a spooky old New England inn inhabited by his caretaker, Frank. Ted learns he is a descendant of the notorious Dr. Frankenstein, and that Frank is, in actuality, Frankenstein's monster.
And every time that every time his character goes outside and it's a storm, he gets struck by lightning in the back. Every time.
And
it's a running gag.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. He doesn't say it hurts. He just says it makes his hand tremble or something. But it's a run-on gag for the very short-lived series. I just recently ran across it myself.
Yeah.
So I'm definitely I have flipped the switch for Christmas, and we're doing a big Christmas show tomorrow night.
Oh, nice.
We're doing, oh, my gosh, where is it? We're doing,
we should wait until December.
You're not doing that Mexican Santa Claus.
It is December. It's December.
You're allowed.
Dale, it is December.
You're not doing that Mexican Santa Claus one, are you?
No.
Santa Claus versus the devil?
No.
Oh, thank God.
People are scared of this. So I'm showing the 1950s Mabel Beaton puppets, Twas the Night Before Christmas. If you've ever seen that, I love it, but people say it's horrifying.
Which
and
one?
Then there's a monster. What?
Which one is horrifying?
The Mabel Beaton puppets, Twas the Night Before Christmas. Some people find those puppets, marionettes, they find them scary. I'm like, I love it, but
they're disturbing.
Well, we grew up with Bozo. Are we afraid of clowns? No, I don't have a problem with them. Anyway, and then believe it or not, we're going to run all this. We're going to Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer has a monster in it, so we're going to do the Rankin-Bass that, and then we're going to do the Rankin-Bass Life and Adventures of Santa Claus. We're going. It's you know, we flipped the switch. It's December. We're ready. Okay, so it's a countdown, and actually, oddly. The first time Rudolph aired was December 6th. And so it's like a time before, time after. My show won't hit the 6th. But was that your cat?
No. That was me.
It was a ghost.
I said, cool.
Oh, yeah. So, it originally aired Sunday, December 6th, 1964.
That was my cat. That was my cat, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Got
cut
under the rocking chair again, did he?
Yeah.
I think I hear my bird. Yeah, there he is. That's my bird. And then a whole bunch of other stuff wrapped around it that'll be fun. So we've taken the blinders off, so to speak, and ho, 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 we're ready to go. And then I've got to decorate the set. More. I started last week, but I need to. We're just slowly moving into it, and that was, you know. But yeah, I don't think we're going to be getting the. We're not going to be getting the Mexican Santa Claus, and we're not going to be getting the Mexican Santa Claus Conquers the Martians. We're going to go different
thank
routes.
You, thank you, thank you.
It's kind of a shame.
Thank you.
Really.
Well, I mean, for years and years and years, I've been doing that, but there's more fodder out there to play with, so.
But for the life of me, I can't remember anything beyond tomorrow. So yeah, I'm kind of stuck. But anyway. So it should be fun. Are you guys familiar with the Mabel Beaton puppets?
No.
Not really. No.
Wow. Okay. Well, M-A-B-E-L, B-E-A-T-O-N, puppets, and you can go to the YouTubes, and you can see these things, and they were puppets, back when I was a youngster, they took us into the auditorium Christmas time, and they showed this big screen, you know,
kids
auditorium.
And it was horrible.
I don't remember crying, but we saw this, and it was magical. It was neat. And the Santa Claus they got in, I don't know how they did all this stuff, but animated this.
Give me the second name again.
M-A-B-E-L, and then the last name is Beaton, B-E-A-T-O-N.
Beaton.
Puppets.
Okay.
They were in the 1950s.
Okay. Oh,
and there's one called
Twas
the Night Before
Christmas.
They're
marionettes, but they almost look like stop action stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, marionettes, and whoever it was, the marionette people, it did freaking amazing.
Just stop action.
And the Santa Claus is awesome. They're puppets, so I don't know about the stop action.
No, I said it's almost like, it almost looks like stop action, but it's puppets.
Almost like, yeah.
There ain't no Ray Harryhausen, that's for sure.
No, it's string puppets. And
yeah.
they were master puppeteers. You know, it was just wow. And I loved the look of Santa Claus in that. They had amazing Santa Claus as the puppet. So that was a lot of fun. But some people say that that's creepy and scary. I'm going like, what? Are you scared of a marionette?
Apparently.
Maybe so. So it fits with the horror theme that people are freaked out about. You know, it's like, great, okay, there you go. It's good that I can freak you out with Christmas stuff. Sure, why not? You know.
Well, that's from 1950.
Yeah.
1950 on the button? Okay, there you go.
Yeah.
Well, they showed it in 1970-ish, 1969, 70, 71, something like that. They showed it in the auditorium at the elementary school I was in.
Cool.
And they also showed
had film strips in our school.
Get out of town. I mean, they had film strips, but we also had actual – you know, movies, 16 millimeter, whatever they were. And they dragged us into that auditorium for Halloween and showed us the Wolfman versus Frankenstein.
Ooh, now that's cool.
Can you? And the Black Cat. I saw both of those.
That scared me.
I was a little kid.
This 1951 is different than the one you were talking about. This isn't puppets. Even though it was called The Spirit of Christmas.
Yeah. No, that one too. Yeah, they made two of them. There's a Spirit of Christmas too. Let me get it. Yeah, there's both of them, and they're all marionettes.
Oh, this is the telephone AT&T.
Yes, that's it. Yes.
Yeah, another program that was notable on that Bell telephone AT&T, that was... it was the pilot for what would become The Veil. And although Karloff didn't host that, he acted in that episode.
Mm-hmm. But that's exactly it. The AT&T, the Bell, whatever that was. That's it. And so they've got it set up like the Nativity, and they do that, and I'm not going to show that. And then they've got Twist the Night Before Christmas, which is more Santa Claus elf type, and I'm going to run that. But the marionettes, how they make them move, I'm like, wow.
That's stop motion.
Just amazing.
I'm looking at YouTube right now. It's stop motion. But with using a marionette type creature, probably with an armature and clothing and stuff.
Like the Santa Claus. in the sleigh. Like, I don't know what they're doing, but that's
have
an animated
seen,
thing.
Have you ever seen the early Ray Harryhausen Mother Goose stuff?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
And some of those people felt that was creepy looking a little bit. The
yeah,
animation
right.
was, it was an odd thing. And I think they were going for realism with the faces of some of the characters were kind of creepy looking. And his mother used to make the clothes for those, in those Mother Goose mm-hmm. stories. And he would do these in
yeah,
his garage.
Yeah, this whole thing was just, I found it to be, well, because we were initiated into it, and it was joyful and happy and Santa Claus and all that, we didn't find it creepy. But you know, people with eyes of today find it creepy, and I'm like, ooh, you know.
Yeah.
I would love to have a figurine of this Santa Claus. He's beautiful. Just,
the
wow.
Green Giant was animated, and he was kind of creepy at first. He did like almost a lurch-like
oh,
face.
I bet.
Jeez, yeah. I'm not going to eat no vegetables ever now, Mom.
Yeah. Yeah. The goop on this Mabel Beaton thing is you can see the strings. So it's stop action. They're doing stop action and marionetting at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Or interlacing
yeah.
the two. I guess. I don't know. Heck of a presentation, though.
Amazing.
So
stuff.
Anyway, yeah, that's definitely part of my Christmas going way back. And we had Elf Knee Huggers. Not Elf on a Shelf. We had Elf Knee Huggers.
Yes.
And they were...
I still have one.
My
grandpa... We used to creep our kids out. We still have ours. You know where
I have
his...
over... I think I've got like 15 or 20 of them.
That's disturbing. But what we would do put him in different places every day, like where the kids couldn't reach. And that was basically
right.
he was Santa's narc. He would show up
right,
on Thanksgiving,
right.
and then every day he'd be somewhere else, and the kids would be like paranoid. It was yeah. great watching them twitching and stuff.
And I had a grandmother that had them all over. She went all out for this. It was that, and it was the Andy Williams music on the record player and Dean Martin and the old Christmas stuff, yeah, from way gone by.
Yeah. When the kids moved out, I would email them pictures of the elf. He's still watching you.
He's still watching.
Oh, man.
He's still watching.
There you go. Yeah.
If you haven't made
it
to
the
psychiatrist's couch yet, let me give you a little assist.
Yeah. But again, that's a creep factor. It depends on how you were initiated to them. You know, to me, it was like, yay, Christmas. I'd be like, oh, my gosh, that thing's alive. It's narking on me. Yeah, that would be kind of weird.
Neurotic kids are well-behaved kids, at least for a while. Until they snap.
Yeah,
It's
I don't know. It was just... I've got a few snapshots of very early Christmases, and they're very positive, you know. The father wasn't drunk beating, you know, anybody or, you know, there wasn't nobody set the tree on fire. And, you know, I mean, it was
yeah.
a good time.
Well, not accidentally, anyway.
Right, you know. I think at some point later I ran across, I wasn't able to interpret it, but there was some type of tension between family members or something. I didn't really get that. I was too young to gauge what was going on, but there was something there, you know, where it's like...
Did either of you guys have this experience? It's Christmas, your tree is up, and all of a sudden, from the tree, there's a pair of eyes staring at you.
No, I didn't, no.
And it's a big,
no.
hairy cat who's somehow wormed
yeah.
his way up the tree near the top, and he's like,
yeah.
I'm stuck. I'm too fat.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that was Bandit.
Never had that. And we had, like I said, growing up at a certain point, we had squirrel in the house, possum in the house, fox in the house. Never had one going up the tree, though. So I don't know.
Pal has an opossum buddy that comes out every day around 6:30, 7 o'clock at night. He goes
and
to where the bird feeders. He goes to where the bird feeders were to get some seed. So the dog goes nuts and
right
wants to go out and play with the opossum.
And do they get along, or is he actually barking at the opossum?
He barks at it. The first time the opossum did his faint thing and laid down, and then Pal poked him with his paw, like, "Hey, you okay?" It got up and it ran off. There's a spot under the fence between the neighbor's yard. He goes in there because that neighbor is I have a little bit of field behind my property before the woods. His goes to the woods, so the possum goes to the woods that way, to the neighbor's yard, because he's not fenced in the back.
I found out something about possums years ago, and that is if they go full tilt with the playing dead,
yeah,
before they fall over and play dead, they poop. And then they fall in their poop, and it smells like they're dead. So
yes.
It's like,
they let out like a death stink, hoping
and then they fall in
whatever.
It. Yeah.
What if it's a vulture, you idiot?
Yeah.
He's like, good.
Yeah.
I can't smell anything.
Yeah, but our vultures.
Oh, crap.
They don't have a
moving.
Sense of smell. Yeah.
The life of a vulture. Ah,
yeah.
Oh, damn it, it's still moving.
Yeah. Never had a vulture. My parents had an owl once.
Yeah. Don't possums have some pretty nasty teeth, but I think they really only bite as an absolute last resort.
Yeah, last resort.
I can't remember how it actually works out, but I think a possum has the most teeth of any land mammal, I think.
God. They do have a long snoot like a dog. Maybe he thinks it's a puppy loss.
I remember I was holding, we had a one-eyed possum. It was inside. It couldn't be released. And I was holding it and petting it, and it was just sitting in my lap, kind of snoozing. And at a certain point, it yawned. And I saw all those teeth, and I was like, this thing could kill me.
Now, the dog's worse than an old man. When he sees animals, it's like, get out of my yard. Get out of my yard.
Yeah, what the heck's going on with that? I mean, it depends. I mean, yeah. Depends on how you rear your animal. If your animal's around other animals, it's not going to be that aggressive. It's going to kind of be like, everybody's my friend.
And but he's
not
a big, bumbling oaf, and the squirrel's like, no! And takes off.
Yeah.
It's how hilarious it goes up the tree and the dog gets frustrated. It's like, damn.
Damn, no
balloon
bombs.
Come back.
Yep.
What is that from?
Shane,
the Christmas story?
Come back, Shane.
Oh, there you go. Shane, Batman. Come back, Shane. Come back.
No, Shane the Western.
Well, there was a Shane in Batman. Where as a little kid, he was like, come back, Shane, come back. Which was a parody on the Shane, S-H-A-N-E.
Yes.
Cliff Robertson played Shame, S-H-A-M-E.
Shame.
In Batman, third season, because it was a one-off thing.
Ah.
You got a half hour.
Yeah, you've never seen Shame, the original? You're not a Western guy, are you?
No, I just have that nod from Batman. I know of it, but yeah.
Yeah, I love Westerns. Good ones.
There's some movies out there I would like to re-see, but I can't remember the name of them. And I've got all this other stuff going on. One thing that I can't find a good bit of footage of the Norelco Shaver Santa Claus clip from, like, 1968. I mean, that was like, wow. That was really cool. But
it was.
Every one of them I find, they're muddy.
Played that during
and
the
they can't be
Rudolph. The first
yes.
time they showed Rudolph.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, man.
I don't think I remember the very first one. That was probably, what, 1964, Rudolph?
No, the first one was like, well, no, it was before Rudolph. It was like 1952 or 1962, something like that. It was in black and white. And then, like, 1968, 69, it was color. Well, no,
yeah.
64, it would have been Rudolph, and so it would have been in color then.
Yeah.
64.
If you had a
if color
TV, one,
like, in
we 62 didn't.
Or 69.
We did not have
yet.
Color in 64 in the Kowalski residence, let me tell you.
Right, right. And I ran across that, too. Have you ever seen a horror movie and you didn't know it was ever in color because you had a black and white TV set?
Yeah, it took me a while, but then that when I got a little bit older, you could kind of tell when something was originally color and you're seeing it in black and white.
Uh-huh, right.
There's a certain, I don't know, and an A picture, you use absolutely different colors of like clothing and everything than you would in a color movie.
Really?
Yeah, the shading is different. You need different contrasts and like different shades of gray. You have to sometimes accentuate something and use something that is the same concept of Superman's costume that we saw
yes.
from the TV show.
Right.
It was
gray
and brown.
And the set of the Addams Family in black and white is far different from the one that's in color.
Yes.
Yeah, crazy. Hues of pink and other things you wouldn't think would be there.
Yeah. But it's to make the black and white pop for, you know, contrast and whatever. So you
right.
bring out what you want to bring out and focus on what you want to focus on.
Yeah.
I love black and white. For people our age, for people our age, it's such a good mood.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, unless, except in cases where it was just filmed because it was cheaper that way, which was the case for most movies. Noir knew how to use black and white.
Yes.
Outer Limits and Twilight Zone and Thriller, and Hitchcock, they all knew how to film for black and white.
Yes.
You know, and none of those stories would have been as good in color.
Probably
any
not.
Of those four series. That's why Steven Spielberg's Amazing Stories probably didn't catch on quite as well. But again, there's no anthology series that's ever beat much more than the top 20. And so
there's
it just
been
didn't
anomalies, but like
right
Tales
because people don't want to think they don't that, those make them think it makes them you know new characters every week, you know that host would be the only thing. That would be the same thing every week.
Yeah. But I don't know. I guess guys like us, we like the variety of those anthology shows.
Well, they had a message to them. Twilight Zone, the original Outer Limits, the One Step Beyond. They all had morals to them.
Yeah. They had a good old Gar's moral of the story attached to them.
They did. They did.
As they should.
Right.
I'm looking for a good copy of The Christmas Shaver.
To the best of my knowledge, one does not exist. I want to use it, but it looks horrible. So no.
From what year? You want the original?
I just ran across the darn thing.
Nice.
Okay, they're saying. There's one that's 1970s, but that's not it. It's 1968, 69.
Oh, God. I had no idea they jazzed him up so much in some of these later versions. Jesus.
Oh, yeah. It looks. They did. They were not able to catch what it was.
Here you go. How about 1960s Santa ad?
Let me look at it. 1960s
Norelco Santa ad. There's if it's not all of it, it's a good piece of it. It's a 33-second clip. Colorado Views is the YouTube. Try that one. That's the
I
one
realize
you
they did it so many different versions.
Colorado
or
something.
Me neither. I'm like, wow. It's a taupe-looking picture or sepia-like picture on the cover.
Yeah.
Of a shaver.
No, it, no.
That's
no,
not it?
It's so muddy. And then they've got a big bug on it.
Well, sorry.
I mean, that's it. But like I said, I've been really looking.
That's the right one?
To find. Let me look at that. Let me back it up. No. This one like dived over the camera. The one that we saw, he was spinning towards the camera and then took a right turn. This guy jumps over the camera. So that this one is a different one. Let's see. This one actually say what year it is? Loaf guy. Loaf guy.
1976, and no, that one's too modernized.
Yeah, no,
2011?
Yeah,
1981?
No, definitely not. Yeah, see, a lot of these, they're kicking in this older one.
Here, let's say this 1971.
No, it's definitely not one where Santa jumps over the camera. It's one where he
all
goes,
right.
He spins left and right, and then he makes a right turn.
Yep, nope, he's going over the camera again.
Yeah.
Daredevil Santa.
Yeah, exactly. Let's get rid of that. Because
I don't need Santa jumping over my head, man.
Every one of these is jumping over. And there's some other ones where it looks like hideous.
There's another slightly cleaner version of that one under the user RINUNIX. Where it does,
yeah.
I don't think it goes over the camera.
Yeah.
It looks the same
as
the other
good
one.
About, I'm pretty good about beating up the internet to find these things, but
yeah.
I have looked and I've found people are posting and reposting the same clips.
Yeah.
So
yep.
It's not what I'm looking for. It's not. Is that? I don't know if that's it. No. Okay. So it's pre-1970. It's in the 60s sometime now.
Yep.
But yeah, you can't. I've been looking. I've been beating it up. And nope. So weird one's like 1968, 1969 or something like that. And I don't know why they modified it because it was so beautiful. Well, with that, I am going to take off, guys.
I think we need to go turn off the house lights, turn on the three spotlights, and bring in the one, the only, Mr. James Durante.
Mr. Durant.
There you go.
Good night. Good night. It's time to say
good night.
Adios, amigos.
Good night.
In space.
Adios, muchachos.
What more is this say but good night?
In space.
In space.
We've had a few laughs. And it's time for toodaloo.
Chilly day.
Sorry for what we say. And Inca-tinka-do. Good night.
Inca-tinka-do.
Good night.
The pickle!
The pickle was there. The pickle was there.
Good night, folks.
I heard him.
And good night, Mrs. Calabash. Wherever.
See you tomorrow.
No aliens allowed.
Oh, come on. Not even one?
Not even one. Well, except for Uncle Martin.